like that based on people's sexuality. Really, Derek? God bless you. You have led a charmed life.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. It is our Future Friday, and he's going to be coming to us live from Oakland, California. We're going to find out what's going on in the streets there. It appears that a second Iraq War vet has been injured and taken to the hospital. So in addition to the guy last week who got shot in the head with the tear gas canister, now there is reports of a second vet who has been injured. You kind of got to wonder, what are you guys doing out there? So it'll be interesting to talk to Dave about that. Also in the second hour, Pennsylvania State Representative Mike Sterl is going to be here talking about the state of campaign finance in the state of Pennsylvania, where the money's going, where it's coming from, how do we get a handle on this? Because everywhere you look, money, money, money. I mean, this election cycle, scary stuff. And they're talking about the next 2012, the election cycle, being $6 billion. What could we do with $6 billion? I think we could do an awful lot more good than hand it off to media companies and hand it off to Comcast and the big broadcasters and Citadel. And I think we could do a lot better. I do. Also in the second hour, Mark Price, Keystone Research Center's labor economist, going to be talking about the jobs number that came out today. Also the outlook for the future and some of his recent musings over at the Third and State blog. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the big news today, and I guess you have to give Occupy Wall Street props, according to the Pew Research Center Project on Excellence in Journalism, they have found that Occupy Wall Street was the top story on Twitter in the week October 24th through the 28th. So what does that mean? Well, that means that Occupy Wall Street beat out Justin Bieber, baby and all. Is it his? Is it not? That's the question. Stop and think about the importance of that for a second. We, for the longest time, had been led by the shiny thing. The runaway bride, instead of talking about the war in Iraq. This trial, this story, this shiny thing, this distraction. We're actually now talking about something important, income inequality, talking about corporations paying their fair share of taxes, talking about how do we make this a better country instead of, is it Bieber's baby? Was it his? Did he go to an abstinence-only school? I got to tell you, I'm thrilled to death. I think that is an excellent sign. Congratulations, America, or at least congratulations, Twitter people. So yesterday, Bernie Sanders said it was absurd that Republicans say they're attempting to create jobs. He said that they are obstructing every single effort out there to create jobs. The fact of the matter is the Democrats cannot break the 60 vote number. So the Republicans are filibustering everything that comes up. This latest thing got shot down was a $60 billion infrastructure project bill. Again, you know, they stick to their guns, the Republicans do. Well, we're not raising taxes, and we're not gonna raise taxes on big corporations or wealthy people. And they're not going to invest in infrastructure. And the reality is I'm interested to see what happens next week. Because the Senate Democrats have said that they're gonna roll out one of the big portions of President Obama's jobs plan, which is the part on veterans. How do we get these veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan? How do we get them back into the workforce? And the bill that they're going to put forth is aimed to incentivize companies to do just that, to hire these war vets. And we'll give them a tax incentive, give them something to make that worth their while, but also to make sure that when they come back, there's something here. And I'm told that there'll be additional tax credits for veterans who have some disabilities. So companies that make reasonable accommodations, they'll be able to get something as well. But Sanders is right. Nothing this week went through. And I'm amazed that they're willing to take this stance. And I'm interested to see where this goes, with the vets coming back and all of that. And the president was over in France today. And he was at a press conference. It was about the G20. And he was asked about, you know, what's going on over there. And he said, look, the reality is, you know, the Republicans are unified against the Democrats because Democrats need to raise a little bit of tax money to get infrastructural projects paid for. You know, the Republicans are saying, hey, we want it paid for. Where are you going to get the money? Well, when they talk about raising revenue, as Obama said, you know, they're taking a rigid ideological position. They are hell-bent against anything raising revenue. Everything, according to the president, they believe has to be on the cut side. And he says, look, if that's their rationale, that just doesn't fly. He also argued that the Republicans are placing the nation's 300,000 millionaires ahead of the millions of people who are currently out of work. And if you look at what passed this week, if you look at some of the bills that went through, instead of jobs plans, and look, you know, I think for the last 2 days I've been going off on this In God We Trust joint resolution. No job was created there, but we spent 2 days on that, and we spent a whole lot of media time on that because, you know, like I said, you know, we're godly people, and I wish we would just act like it now. But beyond passing that piece of legislation, we went on and we passed the Wireless Tax Fairness Act of 2011, the Kate Persey Peace Corps Volunteer Protection Act of 2011, the Civilian Service Recognition Act of 2011, Veterans Compensation Cost of Living Adjustment Act, I guess that's a good one, H.R. 1695, which raises the monetary thresholds for banks issuing securities. So part of the of this was the Small Company Capitalization Formation Act of 2011, getting money to small businesses, getting around the SEC. Also another one, the Access to Capital for Job Creators Act. Again, more getting around the SEC. And, of course, the Entrepreneur Access to Capital Act. Again, more getting around the SEC. That's what the House did. No jobs plan. I didn't see that. The Senate, on the other hand, they put in the Appeal Time Clarification Act to clarify time limits for civil lawsuits. The Removal Clarification Act, Federal Courts Jurisdiction and Venue Clarification Act, the Department of Agriculture, Commercial Justice, Transportation and Housing and Urban Development and Related Appropriations Act, the Walla Walla Forest Service Compound Conveyance Act, the Sugarloaf Fire Protection District Land Exchange Act, the Fort Pulaski National Monument Lease Authorization Act, the Box Elder Utah Land Conveyance Act, the Utah Land Conveyance Act, the Unitah Water Conservation District, Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, East Bench Irrigation District Water Contract. Any jobs bills here? Are you hearing any of this? The Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Business Travel Cards Act. And, of course, my favorite, America's Cup Act. We may actually get to host the 34th America's Cup. Maybe that'll bring a job. Thoughts? But no jobs plan. No, how are we going to get out of this mess? And as we move towards November 23rd, we're looking at another hostage situation because we don't have an ominous appropriations bill. They're doing little tiny things, but we're still a ways away on the big stuff. So are we, right before Thanksgiving, going to be looking at another one of these hostage situations that has made us look really incredibly weak, stupid, ineffective? And the rest of the world's going, look at them. They're as bad as the South Koreans. They're as bad as the Greece. And while they're passing those things, and while all that stuff may be important in little sectors and little bits and pieces, we see the small town of Highland Park, Michigan. Highland Park, Michigan is tearing out, not just turning off the streetlights, they're actually tearing them out of the ground. Now, Highland Park has a distinction of having an unemployment rate of 22%. The average median income in the town of Highland Park, just over 18,000. Compare that with the rest of the state of near 49,000, and you get an idea that this is a poverty-ridden city. 42% of the people in Highland Park, Michigan, live below the poverty line. So as you've seen jobs leave the area, you have seen the property values fall, the tax base fall, and now the city's got a $58 million debt. They're faced with a $4 million electric bill, which is about $60,000 a month, they're saying they're going to make payments on. So here you are. What do you do? Well, they're turning off the lights. And not just turning off the lights, they're pulling up the poles and they're shipping them away. Got to get some money out of them, I guess, somewhere. So what happens in a poverty-ridden area when you turn off the lights at night? What happens in a poverty-ridden area when you no longer have the assets to even police the roads or those things? And I mean, we've seen some weird things lately. Not paving roads. We've seen shrinking schools, combining schools into massive ones. We've seen closing libraries. I think in Oakland, they said they weren't going to respond to any more domestic violence complaints by people. So the police said, they'll deal. Just come down and fill out a report. Is this where we're heading? Is this the direction that that the Republicans want to take us? And I look, you look at Rick Snyder there in Michigan. A $1.7 billion tax cut for businesses in the state. He cut their taxes by 86%. Maybe I'm the only one who doesn't understand. Maybe that money could have been better spent. Just a quick thought. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with Dave Johnson, Campaign for America's Future. After all, it is our Future Friday. He's in Oakland, California. We're going to find out what's going on at the Occupy Oakland. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 60 protesters from Occupy Chicago, Stand Up Chicago, and several unions disrupted Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's speech on state budget reforms in Chicago Thursday. The protesters bought tickets to the speech and were seated at tables. They interrupted Walker as he began to speak.
Governor Walker is vilified!
Leah Edmonds was one of the 60 who gave Governor Walker a dose of the people's mic.
It was people from Chicago's Teachers Union, from Service Employees International Union, to be there with a bunch of community and labor allies, all of us standing together. It felt very powerful to be able to speak to Governor Walker in that way.
After about 15 minutes, the protesters inside left with no arrests, chanting as they went. To help heal America's economy, National Nurses United has just a prescription, a meaningful financial transaction tax on Wall Street. The Registered Nurses Union was on the march Thursday in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, San Francisco, and at the G20 meeting in France. About 1,500 nurses, joined by the AFL-CIO, Occupy Wall Street activists, and other supporters, rallied outside the White House and marched to the Treasury Department in Washington. Liz Jacobs was one of the National Nurses United RNs taking part in the San Francisco action.
There's an unhealthy economy, and we know what the solution is, and we need to go to where the revenue is that will heal America, and that is Wall Street and a tax on Wall Street.
Red Cross workers in Connecticut are on strike today after they failed to reach an agreement with the blood supply organization. Jesse Russell reports.
The workers represented by Ask Me Council 4 are walking picket lines in Norwalk and Farmington, calling attention to 2 years of working without a contract. The primary issue holding up talks is the number of licensed nurses required at blood drives. The Red Cross has consistently lowered the number over the years, and the workers are concerned it raises safety issues. Other disagreements involve health care and scheduling. The Red Cross workers have additionally expressed frustration over the way the organization has treated them during the contract negotiations. The National Labor Relations Board has filed a number of lawsuits against the Red Cross for violations of unfair labor practices. Disaster workers are not on strike, minimizing the impact of the strike on relief from the storms that have hit New England in the past week. The Red Cross has been importing extra blood reserves from other states into Connecticut since the union made it known a walkout was on the horizon.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
They blame, but some... justification, the problems in the financial sector for getting us into this mess, and they're dissatisfied with the policy response here in Washington. And at some level, I can't blame them. Certainly, 9% unemployment and very slow growth is not a very good situation.
Well, yeah, that's what happened. You know, they shut the port down there in Oakland. The reports that I saw anywhere up to as high as 20,000 people in the streets that day. Some of this later in the day, some a-holes did some dumb stuff. They had a little bit of violence, a little nonsense, and the 99% protesters and occupations across the country are disavowing that kind of violence, saying, look, Occupy Oakland does not advocate violence and has no interest in supporting actions that endanger the community and the possibilities that it has worked to build. Look, at the end of the day, you can't control everybody, and there are always going to be a handful of idiots. And who knows? Who knows the person who started that? Could have been paid to be there. Could have been a Coke plant. Could have been any one of these folks. Anyway, let's talk to our good friend Dave Johnson, who is out in California at one of the Occupies. Dave, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm out here at Occupy Redwood City, which is actually pretty small today. Small town too, though.
So now, when you were in Oakland, right?
Yeah, I was in Oakland all day and into when they took over the port and everything.
So all we've been hearing are the acts of violence, a handful of idiots doing dumb stuff. For the most part, did you see any of that?
I did see a little bit of it, but I got to say, I got there in the morning. When I got there, they had the 14th and Broadway, the intersection, and the police a couple blocks down had blocked it off for them. The Occupy is at a place called Oscar Grant Plaza, which is named after that guy. Now, they've named it. It's got another name, but the Occupy people have named it that, after that guy who was shot by a cop who thought he was reaching for his taser,
right,
if you remember that. And they own that area, and on Wednesday they owned the downtown of Oakland. Now, Oakland is a big city, and this was a big deal from the morning on. I mean, we're talking hundreds into the thousands of people starting early all over downtown. There was not a police officer in sight, and I want to talk about that in a little minute. But they occupied the downtown. There were not a lot of businesses open. Everybody you could see anywhere was pretty much supportive of them. Now, this was a crowd of people like you and me. If you went there, there was a lot of labor there, a lot of people from labor, CWA, iron workers, all kinds of different organizations were there. But the big deal is that they had taken over is the wrong way to put it. It was more of a cooperative thing. But this is a big American city, and this was on the same day. Seattle, Portland, all kinds of other cities I was reading about, the same day had marches in support of Occupy Oakland. So then later on, there were marches. They went all around the town, and then at 4 o'clock, there was a first wave of marches to the port, and at 5 o'clock, a second wave. I got on a bus, so I was down there early because they were setting up picket lines of not a lot of people, but again, the police were leaving everyone alone, and there's a lot of reason for that. The longshoremen have a contract that says if there's disruption, they can turn around and head back home and get paid. And so they set up picket lines at strategic points around the port, and then the march started at 4, and they must have been moving fast because they got to the port fairly quickly. But the 5 o'clock march was huge. People that weren't part of the strike that were getting off work and things like that. I was just shocked walking around the port area later how many people. It could have been as many as 20,000, but everybody was so spread out that it's very, very hard to put a number on it. I'll tell you this, it was huge. And this is on a Wednesday. This is a big deal, Rick. Right. I got to say, because it's not just Oakland. It is spreading. It's in cities all over the country. I'm in a little town called Redwood City. They now have a Friday Occupy group that meets down at the courthouse. It's in hundreds of towns, but it's also growing because they're getting more and more people at all of these events. This is important.
So let me ask you this. Ask you this. You know, the folks that you met in Oakland, the people that they're in Redwood City, the frame that I keep hearing is that you don't know why you're there. You're a bunch of hippies, a bunch of unemployed, lazy people. As Sarah Palin said, just people who are looking for a bailout, people who want a handout. Is this what you're finding when you're talking to people?
Of course not, and I'm sure everybody listening here understands what it's about. It's about the corporate greed and the huge amounts of everything that's going to the 1%. Right now, with people all across the country at these protests, our Congress is debating cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare in order to preserve the tax cuts for the rich at a time when we're taking these pay cuts, pension cuts, and all of this. And in the first year, I just read a number. In the first year after the bailouts, the 400 richest people in the country got $300 billion more dollars in income. Okay. The top 1% income is growing and growing. I heard that CEO pay is up 28% just this year. And everybody knows how bad it is for regular people who are trying to find work or who have work, who are taking cutbacks or under pressure, or especially somebody over 50 who's trying to find a job and hearing they're going to get their Social Security cut and their retirement age and their Medicare age increased. So that's what this is about.
I'm sure all the people down there are happy that our House of Representatives passed the reassurance that the country's motto is "In God We Trust." So I'm sure they're thrilled about that. Instead of passing a jobs bill, they've chosen something else.
Yesterday, the Republicans filibustered, prevented a vote on a bill to start rebuilding our infrastructure. At a time, we've been deferring infrastructure maintenance since Reagan. It is getting to be in bad shape, and this is work that's going to have to be done. It has to be done, and you can get me to do it at zero interest rates now, and we have millions of people unemployed. What are they doing? And that is why people, as I wrote something today, this is getting to be like Mubarak in Egypt, when people were on the streets, and this guy thinks he's still, you know, just doing his deals with his cronies. It's the disconnect between what's going on in people's lives and what's going on in Washington has never been greater.
Do you think Washington's hearing what's going on? I mean, you can't miss it. It's on the news. And as I said at the beginning of the show, Occupy Wall Street had more Twitter activity than Justin Bieber did. And, you know, to be honest, I think that's a great thing because maybe we're not being distracted by the shiny thing in the room. Maybe we're actually paying attention to issues that really matter.
Enough of us aren't, and more people are showing up at these things. I want to emphasize to everybody, you really ought to try one out. It's a very interesting thing to go to see how one of these, they call it a general meeting. They have them once or twice a day everywhere there's an occupy. It's an interesting thing to see how these meetings work, to see how regular people are out there practicing democracy. And I'm going to warn you, you're going to run into a couple of people with beards. And if that scares you, but you ought to go anyway, because it's about who shows up. It's people like you and people who aren't like you and everybody else, and we're all citizens together. And there's a lot of labor people down there, too, Rick.
Yeah, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. OurFuture.org is the website. He's written some outstanding pieces, especially the one called Oakland Occupied, Will Washington Listen at Last? And I'm hoping that they do. I'm hoping that the message that's been sent out is getting through, because you listen to the Tea Party, all they wanted to do was tear down government. They want small, ineffective government so that corporations can run the thing. If you look at the things that have come out of this Occupy movement, most of it's legislative stuff that Washington is going to have to listen to, like going back and reinstating Glass-Steagall, a transfer tax like Bill Gates came out in favor of. There's a lot of legislative stuff here.
Yeah, these are people who are paying attention to stuff, and they're asking for just reasonable things. You know, let's restore our country's infrastructure. Let's put a transaction tax on these stock trades that's very small, but there's so many stock trades now with the computers that you bring in a lot of money. It discourages speculation, and it gets Wall Street to help pay for some of the damage they did to the country.
The damage they did, exactly.
Yeah. I didn't mean you, Rick.
No, I mean, you did it right on the yeah. head. The damage they did, because I think the emphasis has to be on who did this. I mean,
right.
I know Mike Bloomberg wants to say that we shouldn't worry about who did it, we should just fix it. No, I worry about who did it, because if we let them get away with it, they're going to do it again.
Well, that's important to say who did it, because you got to know what the problem is you're trying to solve, you know? Or else you're going to solve the wrong problem, and you're still going to have the problem. But I've got to say, you've got to come to an Occupy thing that can be fun. I'm sorry there might be drummers there, but, you know, what do you call a drummer who breaks up with his girlfriend?
I don't know.
Homeless. Homeless. But anyway, so that even if there's drummers there, it's worth going.
Yeah, well, there you go. They've got to go somewhere. So you might as well be there. But I got to be honest, you know, we've gone to a couple of them. We went to Philadelphia here in Harrisburg. There's one going on that has been going on continuously for the last couple of weeks. What to me is exciting about it is you're actually talking to people. I mean, most of the political conversation that goes on in this country up until this point has been back and forth sniping at each other over the internet or over Twitter or over texting or whatever. Here, people are actually looking each other in the eye and talking to each other.
You go down and you meet your fellow citizens. I'll tell you something. The one in Redwood City I was just at, one of the things about Oakland is the different ethnicities and races that were there, different ages, everybody. But the one here in Redwood City, there's more older people, you know, and
Those 60s radicals?
Yeah, a few of them. One of the things was there were five or six cops that were assigned to come down, so I asked them if they're getting overtime, and some of them are, so that's good.
Yeah, helping the economy.
Yeah. So, and Rick, what do you call a drummer with half a brain?
I don't know. What do you call a drummer with half a brain?
Gifted.
Oh,
but,
whoa, why are you beating up on the drummers?
Oh, I don't know. You go to an Occupy thing, and there they are. I'm from Santa Cruz, where they have drum circles, so I'm already prepared for it. But
okay. Brett's not overly thrilled with drum circles either.
Yeah. So I got to say, the Occupy thing, there are so many people that are excited by it. I really hope people can go just visit one, just once, and see what it's like. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your country and to democracy, I think.
Are there any hippies where you're at?
Not, well, they call them the Raging Grannies.
And oh, I love the Raging Grannies.
With, the women with gray hair, and they're all dressed up and they're singing and stuff. And they're sort of like hippies, I guess. But no, not where I am. There were hippies at Occupy Oakland, but there was everybody at Occupy Oakland, I got to say.
Yeah, because all I keep hearing is there's just a bunch of hippies and malcontents. And I've gone to them, and I've met a hand, maybe one or two hippies, a couple of hippies here or there, maybe a malcontent. But most of the people are just folks who work every day, bust their behind, and they're still falling behind.
Give me a minute. I want to talk about that violence in Oakland, because it was remarkably peaceful and harmonious most of the time, even though there were no police except a couple in sight anywhere. Now, here's the thing. A few, they call themselves anarchists, I guess, dressed in black. They come looking for trouble. They're wearing black masks, and they showed up and they smashed the windows at Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
And then what happened later was around midnight, I think, that they, and only they, and there were not very many people around at the time, started fires and bonfires in the streets in order to start trouble. Now, here's what I want to say is that we have all across the country these outpourings of citizens coming down to their town squares and getting involved in this. And in places like Oakland, what happens is that they get these police lines set up against them and to intimidate them. Now, when citizens get together to do other things, what you have is a cooperative relationship with your local government, you know. You have policing, like at a football game or a festival or other kinds of events, because you do need to have security, sure. You know, in large groups of
people.
You need
somebody to take care of the a-holes and get them out.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there are predators out there, and there are people who want to make trouble and start fights. And so you can't, just like Oakland found out, you also can't have a situation with thousands and thousands of people and entirely no policing either, because police are part of a community just like firefighters are part of a community and everybody else. And they should have been there from the start, provided by the community. The community should have provided porta-johns and things like that, because these are citizens, and this is not Syria. This is not Egypt. You know, you don't show up and then the government does a show of force to say this is not acceptable behavior to come and protest what Wall Street did, you know, which is what it says when you're getting these lines of police, you know, barricading you from showing up and participating as a citizen. And so I think people are catching on to this, too, because some of the cities are starting to do that, starting to cooperate with their citizens who turn up at these things. These things aren't going to go away, and they're finding a way to accommodate it and police it and provide things like porta-johns and other government services.
Yeah, I look at Oakland. I look at what happened there in Oakland. What they spent $5 million bombing them, shooting them with tear gas and rubber bullets when they could have spent just a couple of thousand dollars to rectify the problems that they claimed they were there to deal with. Seem kind of silly to me. But here again, as you pointed out, if they work in cooperation, because I go back to the Tea Party people. If they'd have set up police lines against the Tea Party people, boy, we'd still be hearing about it.
Oh, yeah. And that's the point of this, is that it really was a reaction to Occupy, like the reaction in places like Egypt and Syria. And that says a lot right there, I think, about what's going on between our citizens and our government these days. Yeah. The expectation is that there's a few people who count, and then there's a lot of people who don't. And that's the Occupy message, is we are the 99%. We say it's time to tax the rich. We say it's time to stop the corporate greed. And they're coming out, and they're talking about it. And, you know, Congress and Washington had better start listening, I think, because this can only grow, even if it's going into winter.
Right there with you, Dave. As this moves on, we'd love to hear more about what's going on. I hope you spend more time out there and organize this thing and make it grow.
Thanks so much. Thanks very much, Rick.
Dave Johnson, Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org is the website. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this. We'll be right back.
The Rick Smith Show.
Tell me with whom you walk, goes the old adage, and I'll tell you who you are. Maybe you're wondering just who the heck this Rick Perry guy is, this loud-talking, slow-thinking Texas buckaroo who says he should be your president. His PR storyline is that he's just a straight-talking conservative politico out of Paint Rock, Texas. But it's been ages since Perry walked with the good folks of Paint Rock. Now in his 27th year in political office, this guy has consistently walked with Mr. Money and been the loyal servant of the corporate powers. Let's take a peek at Perry's piggy bank. Not his personal money, though it is curious how he became a millionaire while doing nothing but government work. Rather, check out the Texas Enterprise Fund, a stash of some $400 million tax dollars that Governor Perry has essentially used as a political slush fund. TEF is supposed to be a cache of state cash for him to dole out as incentives for corporations to create jobs. But its job creation performance is somewhere between pathetic and a scam. The fund has, however, been a boon for Perry's re-election campaigns and for the coffers of his corporate benefactors. For example, 20 of the governor's top corporate donors that have put a total of $6.5 million into his electioneering pockets have been rewarded with a stunning $116 million in TEF handouts. In a recent analysis, the watchdog group Texans for Public Justice found that Caterpillar gave $124,000 to Perry and got more than $9 million from TEF. Lockheed Martin put $232,000 in Perry's pay-to-play scheme and got $5 million back in state money. And GE put in $640,000 and got $4 million from the fund. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get the full report on Perry's piggy bank, go to tpj.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Got 5 ways to hold him to account. 45 away to snuff our verses out. Can you hear me? Are you listening? No power without accountability.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Or check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there. Or you, if you have a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go. So as we've been talking about, the infrastructure bill that was supposed to be passed, $60 billion in infrastructure spending, filibustered by the Republicans. So no infrastructure bill, but leave it to the House Republicans to dream up a scheme to get Drill Baby Drill in there. So according to them, the only way they're going to pass any infrastructural improvements is if we, well, basically let them drill everywhere, wherever they want. Carte blanche. Go, take your needle and go at it. Look, I'm not against drilling. If you can do it the right way. If you can do it without destroying the environment, if you can do it without destroying the water, which we're going to be fighting wars over in the near future, if you can do it without destroying the air, we need the energy. I'd love to be off the foreign stuff. But this idea that we can just open it up and do whatever you want, I kind of have a problem with that. I have a problem with saying, here, corporate America, go make as much profit as you can, and don't worry about those regulations. Because all the while, what they're doing is they want to defund the EPA. They want to do away with, well, they actually want to do away with the EPA. And if you look at Camp's bill, wants to take I forget what the number was, but it was probably the vast majority of the funding away from the EPA. So at a time where you're advocating for more drilling, you're pulling away from enforcement and oversight. And that, I guess, is the Republican way. Is it not? So former New Jersey Governor John Corzine in trouble. He was the head of MF Global. The reason I brought it up, I find it hysterical that he has said that, well, he's not going to seek a severance package. So the thing goes belly up under his watch. You got worries over its $6.3 billion holdings in the Eurozone. They're in huge trouble, And he's saying, well, you know what? I won't. I'll step down, but you don't have to pay me a severance package. I find that pretty ballsy. I don't even know where you go with that. Because the sad part about it is contractually, he's entitled to a boat ton of money. When Home Depot fired Robert Nardelli for the stock plummeting and the company, you know, in big trouble, they had to hand him $210 million to get rid of him. And this is the kind of stuff that Corzine was entitled to, but, you know, maybe he's got future political aspirations. I don't know. But it kind of makes me laugh that, oh, I'll give up my severance package. You don't have to pay me. No, no. So what happened to that meritocracy thing they kept telling us about? You know, because we know it's BS. But, you know, they at least need to keep up the frame, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, you talk about these golden parachutes, Rick. That's just another one of the several hundred reasons why people are out in the street. They see two sets of rules, two sets of justices in this country, and they're exactly right. I mean, how many people get fired for relatively small things? And you have CEOs who have basically run them into the ground, and they walk away, some of them, with tens of millions of dollars, and you say, where is the justice?
And, you know, I run a small business. If I don't pay my taxes, they come, they lock me up. And I look at this story we talked about yesterday. What's amazing to me is that you've got all of these companies, and they identified 30. They looked at 280 of the top 500 companies in the U.S., and they came up with 30 who have paid nothing and, in fact, gotten money back the last 3 years. 30 companies have paid nothing in the last 3 years. There are a bunch, a ton more that have one or two years have paid nothing, but these 30 paid nothing for all of the years that they looked at. And one of the companies is this Pepco Holdings Incorporated in D.C. They're the big Washington area power company. And, you know, I've got friends who live in D.C. who say every time the wind blows, their power goes out. Every time it snows, the power's off for weeks. They had a negative tax rate of almost 58%, which means that not only did they not pay taxes, but we paid them with massive subsidies. In fact, somewhere around in 2010, they got a tax refund. Just in the year of 2010, a tax refund of $270 million. So we paid them for really crummy service. And I remember talking last night to Representative Caltagrione, who wants to proposing a bill that when the power goes off, if it's over a certain amount of time, the power company has to pay the people back and say, look, as an incentive for them to get to work. Because exactly what's going on with this Pepco and other companies in the D.C. area, because most of my friends tell me it's shoddy service there anyway, because we've privatized it. The wonders of deregulation. So we've handed this off, and what have they done? They've done absolutely everything they can do to maximize profit, which means getting rid of all those workers, all those people who used to cut down tree limbs and make sure that the lines were taken care of and the poles were well maintained and the system was workable. No, they're scrimping. They're cutting every corner they can. Why? Need to pay the investor class. And we're gonna foot that bill back. Understand that. You're not getting anything cheap out of this. But I look at Pepco, again, at almost a 58% negative tax rate. And you hear the Republicans going on and on. Oh, the U.S. has the highest tax rate in the world. It's 35%. Yet, according to the folks at the Citizens for Tax Justice and the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, the 280 multinational corporations they looked at, a little over 18%, 18.5%. So where's that 35%? Where's the highest one in the world? And of the 30, I mean, these companies that paid no taxes, we know the names. General Electric, we paid them to stay here. Boeing, NiSource, Paycar, PG&E, you know, big companies that we know. Here in the state of Pennsylvania, two big ones in Pittsburgh, PNC Financial Services and Heinz. They paid no tax in those 3 years. Nothing. In fact, PNC, which is Pittsburgh's largest bank, they had a $208 million tax windfall in 2008. In 2009, they got a $110 million windfall. And I look at this and I go, you know, am I missing something here? And they're, even these people at these two tax operations, the Citizens for Tax Justice, who were involved, I guess, with writing part of the tax reform bill of 86. And I've been saying, keep an eye out because this is coming again. We're going to see the exact same thing. We're reliving 1986 over again. They're going, gee, you know, Reagan solved our problems. He swept away all the corporate tax loopholes. And yes, I agree. For a very short period of time, about a day, he swept aside all of those corporate tax loopholes. And the next day, guess what happened? Well, they were back with their hand out saying, gee, wouldn't it be nice if you gave us a tax break? Oh, here is a $20,000 campaign contribution. And while we're making sure that corporate America is well-funded, we're shutting off streetlights. I mean, stop and think about that. We're shutting off streetlights and still handing out handouts to GE. And I think about, doesn't GE make light poles? I mean, isn't it in their best interest to make sure that cities have the ability to pay their electric bills so they can buy light poles to put up instead of tearing them down and reselling them somewhere else? I guess just a thought. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the whole God thing still has me a little upset. We've wasted time. I always thought we were one nation under God. That's what they pounded in my head from the beginning of time. Didn't know we needed to spend 2 days talking about it. But a couple of things that caught my attention. Back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so, but now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now, and this credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again.
Well, that's what what they want you to believe. That's the storyline anyway, and they want to keep making sure that you know that, you know, they're God's their guy. And what I love about that is, you know, then down the road when their self-righteous, sanctimonious behinds do something stupid, you know, like touch kids or cheat on their wives or cheat on their taxes or get caught with their hand in the till, then they do the whole teary-eyed, I'm sorry, kind of thing. Amazing. Now look at what's going on in Kentucky. This Governor Beshear, he took part in a ceremonial Hindu groundbreaking blessing ceremony recently. And you go, really, in Kentucky you're going to do that? But, hey, good for him. I mean, they're his constituents as well. His gubernatorial candidate, the Republican who's running against him, who is also the Kentucky Senate president, a guy named David Williams, he accused the good governor of idolatry, you know, for attending this Hindu ceremony. So on Wednesday, the Republican goes out and he says, well, you know what, maybe it was not the right thing to say. Let me clarify my remarks. And you judge if you think that the clarification is actually worse than the original statement. He says that everyone has a right to be a Hindu person if they want to, but he hopes that they'll open their eyes and receive Jesus Christ as their personal savior. I mean, you know, kind of just, you know, dumping on their religion. So I get it. You're going to attack the governor for partaking in it, but then you're going to attack all those people instead? Somehow that's better? Evidently, he also has a long history of doing these kind of things, and he accused Beshear, the current governor, of his outward displays. You know, he opposes the Christianity stuff. He's against Christmas, hates Christmas, doesn't like prayer at high school football. And he doesn't want the Ten Commandments. He didn't want it. And there's a difference between, you know, here's the thing. There's a difference between being religious and being spiritual. There's a difference between, you know, having faith and then going out and telling everybody, I'm in favor of keep it to yourself. Why don't you just live and be a decent human being? Those Ten Commandment thingies, why don't you try to know them and, I don't know, live them? So in his way of thinking is, you know, you have the right to do the Hindu-y thing. But you better come around to our way of thinking. That's kind of what I got from it. But you know, I guess that's the thing. So I don't know if you saw this story, the Boston Pilot, which evidently is the oldest Roman Catholic newspaper in the country. It is 184 year old newspaper. I'm going, wow. They wrote an article on Wednesday that they have taken down. It was titled Some Fundamental Questions on Same-Sex Attraction. And what they basically said is that if you're attracted to the same sex, the devil's behind it. That's basically it. It's the devil doing it. The devil's doing it to you. And I guess, you know, he had to resign. And I'm like, why? Why resign? Everyone knows that sin is for the devil. You know, it's just... Why would you write something like that? It's beyond my comprehension. But I guess he thought he was in a safe space and that, you know, it's that whole masturbatorial junction of people coming together and they think they all think the same. Here's a surprising poll. And I have to be honest, if you're going to make stuff up, at least try to hide it. And tell me what you think. This recent survey by the folks at the Public Religion Research Institute. Back in August and September, they came out with this poll that found 9 out of 10 Americans, including a strong majority of all religious people, believe that transgender people deserve the same rights and protections as all Americans. And I'm going, 9 out of 10? Where did you pull that out of? I buy the 84% of Democrats. I get that. That makes sense to me. I got to question the 56% of Republicans where they found these people at who are going to be in favor of people who are transgender having the same rights as everybody else. I just don't see that. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's something I'm going to question. The guy who did the poll, a guy named Daniel Cox, he said to explore whether Americans know what the term transgender means, which, you know, I had thought of. Maybe people didn't know what it meant. So, yeah, I'm in favor. What the heck? He said they allowed the people to define transgender in their own words. And surprisingly, two-thirds of Americans were able to give the essential accurate definition. So I found that pretty amazing. They said 11% of the people in the country have a close friend or family member who is transgender. And I'm going, that's pretty cool. If you remember being at the Occupy Philly, coming back, all I heard about was the one transgender guy who walked around the sign. Now, there were thousands of people there, but there was one guy walking around with a sign saying he had been fired from a job for being transgender. And all I heard on talk radio the entire ride through the city of Philadelphia and halfway home was how the transgender people were taking over to Occupy Philadelphia. And it was nothing but it was a transgender festival. Just mind-blowing. But the family value people, our friends on the Republican side, pushed by people like the Family Research Council Action Committee, did something today that I'm still scratching my head over. They give out this award. They give out to the true blue member of Congress who supports their faith, family, and freedom agenda. And, you know, there are a lot of, you know, there are 435 people in Congress, or in the House, and 100 people in the Senate that you could have chosen from. And I think that the Family Research Council chose the absolute worst guy if you're talking about family values. A guy named Congressman Joe Walsh, Republican from Illinois. And anybody who's listened to this program longer than a day knows that he is one of the few congressmen who I absolutely loathe. This is a guy who owes, last number I saw, $117,000 in back child support and is still not paying it and fighting it tooth and nail in court while he's still not paying his child support while making $175,000 a year. And the more you look into this smarmy, the more you look into it, the more you go, this is the guy that the Family Research Council, someone who, you know, puts themselves out as a good, God-fearing Christian organization, that they're going to give him the Faith, Family, and Freedom Award, saying that he's someone worth admiration? Really? Is that how you're going to go with that? And our last story. How many people remember the good Robert Shuler? Good Reverend Robert Shuler, the guy, don't just sit there, do something. Well, he has asked his parishioners to do something. His Orange County, California megachurch, evidently, the Crystal Cathedral is going broke. They're going bankrupt. They're looking for sale. They're trying to get out of it. Now, the good Reverend's wife is ill, and he has sent out an email to all of the congregation to please bring food to the church so that his wife can eat. Which, you know, hey, I'm right there with you. You know, my wife cooks meals for friends all the time if they're ill. And would probably do it for these people as well. So all the people brought food, and the Reverend Robert Shuler's limousine pulled up to pick up all the food to take home. I mean, stop and think about it. You know, here you are. You probably took a bus to bring down, a covered dish to make sure that the Reverend Shuler's wife is going to get some sustenance because she's ill and she's on the mend, and waiting there is the limousine to ferry the food to the founder's sick wife. I mean, really,
Wow. You know, I used to watch years ago. It used to be on every Sunday. Thousands and thousands of people would pack that place. Famous people would come and visit. He was considered kind of an icon, and if you want to call it within the, I don't want to call it an industry, although it is.
It's an industry.
He was almost revered. Wow, boy, my, how the mighty have fallen.
Well, I mean, evidently he's still paying himself a lavish salary, and the family members who work there as well, while the cathedral, the Crystal Cathedral, is crumbling.
Don't you think he would consider perhaps selling the limo?
No.
Just a thought?
No, no.
Just a thought?
No, not going to sell it. Got to get the food back and forth to honey. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Citizens United thing. We're going to talk about the constitutional amendment. We're also going to talk about a hearing that was held today in City Hall down in Philadelphia about Citizens United. Right back with State Representative Mike Sterla. Stick around.
to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 60 protesters from Occupy Chicago, Stand Up Chicago, and several unions disrupted Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's speech on state budget reforms in Chicago Thursday. The protesters bought tickets to the speech and were seated at tables. They interrupted Walker as he began to speak.
Governor Walker is vilified!
Governor Walker is vilified!
And
Leah Edmonds was one of the 60 who gave Governor Walker a dose of the people's mic.
It was people from Chicago's Teachers Union, from Service Employees International Union, to be there with a bunch of community and labor allies, all of us standing together. It felt very powerful to be able to speak to Governor Walker in that way.
After about 15 minutes, the protesters inside left with no arrests, chanting as they went. To help heal America's economy, National Nurses United has just a prescription, a meaningful financial transaction tax on Wall Street. The Registered Nurses Union was on the march Thursday in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, San Francisco, and at the G20 meeting in France. About 1,500 nurses, joined by the AFL-CIO, Occupy Wall Street activists, and other supporters, rallied outside the White House and marched to the Treasury Department in Washington. Liz Jacobs was one of the National Nurses United RNs taking part in the San Francisco action.
There's an unhealthy economy, and we know what the solution is, and we need to go to where the revenue is that will heal America, and that is Wall Street and a tax on Wall Street.
Red Cross workers in Connecticut are on strike today after they failed to reach an agreement with the blood supply organization. Jesse Russell reports.
The workers represented by Ask Me Council 4 are walking picket lines in Norwalk and Farmington, calling attention to 2 years of working without a contract. The primary issue holding up talks is the number of licensed nurses required at blood drives. The Red Cross has consistently lowered the number over the years, and the workers are concerned it raises safety issues. Other disagreements involve health care and scheduling. The Red Cross workers have additionally expressed frustration over the way the organization has treated them during the contract negotiations. The National Labor Relations Board has filed a number of lawsuits against the Red Cross for violations of unfair labor practices. Disaster workers are not on strike, minimizing the impact of the strike on relief from the storms that have hit New England in the past week. The Red Cross has been importing extra blood reserves from other states into Connecticut since the union made it known a walkout was on the horizon.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, over the years, since the Constitution was first signed and put into place, there have been probably more than 11,000 amendments proposed to the Constitution. Only 27 have passed, and rarely do I agree with some of the more idiotic ideas that come out about, hey, let's amend the Constitution for this or that. But this one put forth by Tom Udall, the Democrat from New Mexico, and Michael Bennett, the Democrat from Colorado, I actually agree with. I'm sorry, GE, I'm sorry, ExxonMobil, I'm sorry, Halliburton, you're not people. And we should not be looking at you as people, and you shouldn't have that much sway in our political process. And I do want to know where the money's coming from to fund the election cycles that are going on, which is why I thought it was interesting that our next guest, along with Representative Babette Josephs, held a hearing down in Philadelphia to talk about the Citizens United versus FEC decision. So he's here to talk a little bit about that hearing and a little bit more. State Representative Mike Sterlo, appreciate you taking time for me.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
So tell me, what happened during this hearing today?
Well, we heard some testimony from some individuals that talked about the more than 200 years of history where corporations corporations didn't have standing as citizens in this nation, and the recent decision by the Supreme Court to reverse 200 years of 200 years plus of precedent and say yes, in fact, corporations are citizens and give them the rights of speech like citizens in the United States. I think the worst part about it is give them the rights of citizens, but allow them to be anonymous, because by contributing to 527 PACs and other things like that, where there's no accountability and no reporting of who's actually making the contributions, they get speech as an anonymous entity with the same rights as a citizen who basically has to identify themselves when they speak.
Yeah, you know, you look at this, and one of the frustrating things is we don't know who's behind all of these PACs and all of these euphemistically named groups like Freedom Works and Americans for Prosperity and Americans for Dogs and Puppies and Mom and Apple Pie,
right?
Funded by the Koch brothers and the Scaifes and the rest of the billionaire class that we don't get to know about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for the general public, they look at this and go, "Gosh, really? It sounds like an organization of people I would align myself with," not understanding who it is that the dollars are coming from and what the motivation is in some cases, or the ulterior motive is.
And, you know, you look at the tax codes, and this report had just came out yesterday that we've been focusing on. 30 multinational corporations, these big multi-state corporations, have paid zero tax in the last 3 years. 30 of the Fortune 500, nothing in the last 3 years. In fact, most of those 30 we gave money back to.
Right.
Just for the privilege of them being here. Why? Because they're able to use those profits and the money that we give them back to lobby folks like you, people in Congress, to pass laws that benefit them. I mean, the Marcellus Shale is a perfect example.
Yeah, I mean, there's a case where you look at every poll that's been done, the citizens, the real citizens, favor a tax on Marcellus Shale by more than 70%. And yet the kinds of things we see starting to move through the legislature are about as watered down as you could possibly get, and things that the industry itself has embraced. The one thing I do want to point out is that there are it doesn't actually have to be either you're for corporations or you're against corporations. There are socially responsible corporations that make a profit every day, as well they should.
As I want them to, correct.
And that have basically taken IBM, Colgate-Palmolive, have taken pledges not to contribute to political campaigns and actually have requested that the dollars that they give to things like the Chamber of Commerce and things like that not be used for political campaigns also.
But and I agree with you on that, and I'm not blaming corporations. I'm blaming our Supreme Court. I'm blaming our politicians for allowing them. They're only doing what they're allowed to do. So
right.
I don't blame them for moving jobs overseas. I don't blame them for using the tax code. I don't blame them for any of that stuff, because we've allowed them to do that.
Right.
We've set the rules already.
Right. And that's why I think it's so important. I mean, people have a tendency to shoot at the wrong target, I think. Even with the Marcellus Shale issue, I don't think that the industry is inherently bad. It's the politicians that basically encourage that industry to be bad actors. They would be violating their fiduciary responsibility if they just said, you know what, we'll just send you a couple $1 million in taxes. Don't bother imposing one. We'll just send it to you anyway.
Yeah, they can't do that.
They would be in jail
for
being irresponsible, corporate CEOs. So it really is up to the politicians to say, you know what, we're not going to, hold you hostage here, but we're going to demand that there be a reasonable amount that gets put into the public coffers here to pay for some of the things that you're doing here in this state. And it's the politicians that haven't done that, not the corporations. Corporations actually show up at our hearings and say, you know, look, we've planned for this. We expect it. Go ahead. Do it as long as it's reasonable. We understand. We're with you. And then there's a few politicians that say, not going to happen. Nope, I promised I wouldn't do that.
I signed a pledge.
Right, right.
But, you know, the thing is you pointed out, you've hit on an important thing. In the business plan, it's already there. We're already paying the tax. They're just not giving us the tax money to the state.
Right.
It's already in their business plan, and I've said a number of times, if, you know, Governor Corbett wants us to be like Texas, let's be like Texas.
Right. Right.
They've got an extraction tax, if I'm not mistaken. In fact, they've got a, isn't it some kind of a mineral tax? Even if you're not drilling it, there's...
Right. Right. There's property taxes. Unlike Pennsylvania, in Pennsylvania, the mineral rights aren't taxed like property values. So even though if I have the mineral rights to my land and the land, it may be worth $2 million, the property itself without the mineral rights is only worth $100,000. The local governments can only assess that property at $100,000. If I go to sell it, I'm going to sell it for $2 million, but they can, the local governments can only assess it at $100,000. So that's all that the local government can collect in terms of property taxes. In Texas, they say, no, those mineral rights count also.
Yep.
And last year alone in Texas, they collected more than $2 billion in property taxes just on the mineral values.
Yeah, I don't see any front groups doing any advertising on pushing that legislation.
Right, right. And, you know, the you aren't going to see any of that either. And that's the concern about this is that the people that I believe are actually looking out for the real citizens in this state are willing to say who they are. They're actually proud of it. I kind of view some of these 527s as, you know, cowardly chickens that, they have to, one, put themselves out as some false name that they aren't, and then two, refuse to, let anybody know where the money's coming from. If you think you're right, you should be proud of that.
Yep.
Say, you know, this is the coal company saying this. This is the, you know, oil company saying this. This is some, you know, right-wing billionaire saying this. If you're that scared of what you think that you refuse to tell anybody who you are, you know, that's a terrorist that hangs, you know, in lurks in the shadows somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I think of two groups right off the top of my head. There's this group, the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, who I've asked directly who funds them. They refuse to tell me. And the Tea Party think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation, who I've asked where they get their money. And they say, well, I don't have to tell you.
Right.
And so, well, I think it's important that we know who funds you. And I got to be honest, that seems to be fair to me. If labor unions have to disclose where their money comes from, I think we all should.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, if labor unions can say, hey, listen, this really doesn't come from our shareholders, we're just not going to tell you where it came from, we got it somewhere else, you would see people up in arms about that. When they say, well, we really don't need to tell you where our money came from, we're just the front for somebody, that's okay, because, you know, we're private sector, we can do that. And we're given citizen status now, apparently, by the Supreme Court.
And according to Mitt Romney. I mean, Mitt Romney just the other day.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, that, you know, speaking of those presidential candidates, it's always, I thought one of the best posters at some of the Occupy Wall Street rallies has been the one that says, you know, if citizens are, or if corporations are citizens, I'll believe it when somebody executes one
in
Texas, you know.
There you go. But here's the thing. Here's what bothers me. I just saw a report, I think it was Agency France Press who came out with it, that they're saying that this election cycle, 2012, is going to be in the $6 billion range.
Yeah.
I mean, 2008 was bad enough. The presidential election was $1 billion. And they're talking $6 billion in this next election cycle. And I don't know any average, Joes. There's no way I could raise the kind of money it takes to run for political office. And I'm sure, you know, it's not easy for you. You've been in the legislature a long time. It's gotten progressively more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 20 years ago, a big-time election was $250,000 at the state level. Now it's a million plus. You know, so that kind of, you know, exponential rise in what people are spending on these campaigns is really, I think, cause for everyone to sort of step back and go, is this really what this is about? You know,
because you're really precluding good people from getting into this. Because who wants to spend all day raising money? Who wants to go through that? Because, you know, people, I had a friend who's a congressman, and he said, look, you know, nobody ever bought my vote. When they gave a $20,000 contribution, they bought my ear for a couple of minutes because I had to listen to them to get the contribution.
Right.
And, you know, they didn't buy the vote, but they got access. And that's huge as well. I say, is there nothing we can do? And I look at Citizens United, and they've taken the rights of the states away to do anything. And this is where I call on my Republican friends, you know, the tenthers out there who are, we need states' rights again. This decision has stripped the state's ability to regulate anything on the federal level.
Yeah. Well, and that's really where I think it needs to start. I mean, even at the state level, with a state house race, you know, I can knock on enough doors to overcome somebody else's money, and I have, you know, over the years. But if you're a congressman or even a state senator or a U.S. senator in particular, you just can't knock on 12 million doors. You know, it just doesn't happen. And so it does require dollars to get your message out, which is why I think we should look at the reasonable, rational public financing of campaigns, and also put limits on where those dollars can come from and how much can be contributed, because the numbers that we're talking about have started to become obscene.
Absolutely, and I'm a big fan of publicly financed elections. In fact, you know, we shouldn't be $6 billion. You know, most of that money is going to go to people like Comcast and the big media conglomerates, because it's television.
Right.
Most of it's television advertising. So, in part of that publicly financed election, saying, "Look, you folks on the TV who own the TV waves, that's a public domain. You need to give some time to these candidates."
Yeah, because we're the ones that as citizens that actually own those rights. That we've allowed them to use.
So last question I've got, now that you've had this hearing, where are you going from here? What's the direction? What's the conversation? Where do you plan on going?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things. There's a movement afoot nationally to try and get the states to at least pass a resolution to say, look, you know, Congress, you really ought to consider doing an amendment. We'd have to ratify it, but, you know, you guys got to try it first, see whether you want to send it to us so that we can ratify it. Show that there's at least an interest at the state levels for them to do something. And so I think that's the sort of next step. It's going to be a slow process. There's no question about it. There's going to be a lot of ugly stuff happen until some of this can happen. And you know, I guess that maybe that's part of what's necessary in order to get people fired up enough about this. I still don't think people fully understand what happened in the Citizens United case, where, again, a group called Citizens United, which has nothing to do with citizens.
United.
Yeah, right. You know, basically got corporations personhood status. And we've seen sort of a steady erosion of that in the past few years. And now, in particular, with that decision, I don't think people connect the two yet. That has to happen.
Once that happens,
then I think people will actually get outraged.
Yeah, wait till 2012 when the airwaves are full of nothing but attack ads from people that you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I think maybe there'll be some outrage. But you don't think a constitutional amendment could be passed in, well, 3 or 4 weeks, kind of like Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, thought we could pass a balanced budget amendment in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little more than that, particularly given the fact that the Republicans control Congress right now, and I'm not sure that the U.S. House of Representatives is going to be quick to limit the guys that are stuffing their campaign coffers.
Yeah, not much will there. Mike Sterling, I appreciate the time. Pennsylvania State Representative, always great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Tell me with whom you walk, goes the old adage, and I'll tell you who you are. Maybe you're wondering just who the heck this Rick Perry guy is, this loud-talking, slow-thinking Texas buckaroo who says he should be your president. His PR storyline is that he's just a straight-talking conservative politico out of Paint Rock, Texas. But it's been ages since Perry walked with the good folks of Paint Rock.
Now in his 27th year in political office, this guy has consistently walked with Mr. Money and been the loyal servant of the corporate powers. Let's take a peek at Perry's piggy bank. Not his personal money, though it is curious how he became a millionaire while doing nothing but government work. Rather, check out the Texas Enterprise Fund, a stash of some $400 million tax dollars that Governor Perry has essentially used as a political slush fund. TEF is supposed to be a cache of state cash for him to dole out as incentives for corporations to create jobs, but its job creation performance is somewhere between pathetic and a scam. The fund has, however, been a boon for Perry's re-election campaigns and for the coffers of his corporate benefactors. For example, 20 of the governor's top corporate donors that have put a total of $6.5 million into his electioneering pockets have been rewarded with a stunning $116 million in TEF handouts. In a recent analysis, the watchdog group Texans for Public Justice found that Caterpillar gave $124,000 to Perry and got more than $9 million from TEF. Lockheed Martin put $232,000 in Perry's pay-to-play scheme and got $5 million back in state money. And GE put in $640,000 and got $4 million from the fund. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get the full report on Perry's piggy bank, go to tpj.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind. Here in the state of Pennsylvania, we've been saying Grover Norquist is probably one of the most powerful guys to, I don't even know if he's ever stepped foot in the state, to be honest, but he's got a governor wrapped around his finger, especially when you talk about the Marcellus Shale. But if you remember this week, you had Alan Simpson, the Republican, former Republican senator from Wyoming, who went after Norquist a little bit and said, hey, you know, if Grover Norquist is the most powerful man in America, he should run for president. So Grover shot back saying, well, you know, maybe he's been drinking too much. So today he went on, suggested that, well, he said that Alan Simpson's old enough to have been there, referring to the tax vote back in 1913, but he's too old to have remembered what happened. So that's a nice way to treat your elder statesman. And it's nice to see Republicans infighting like this. What's even nicer to see is there's a freshman Republican who's kind of looking at the tea leaves going, I got elected on the tea platform. I got elected because I was an anti-tax crusader. I was one of the pledge guys for Norquist. But freshman Representative Reed Ribble from Wisconsin, Republican, says he's done with it. No more pledges. Not taking anyone's pledge. He says, I'm no longer signing any pledges to anybody. I'm not going to sign it next year. At the end of the day, he says, I want to be intellectually honest with the folks back home. And, you know, you take these bizarre tax pledges, you take these pledges, and you get in, you get to see what's going on. You can't change. You can't change your mind, which is why they put those there. They're so narrowly confined, constricting that I wouldn't vote for a person who took any pledge, even if I wrote it up. For the sole reason is if he's that narrow-minded in his thinking, do I want him? Do I want someone who's going to weigh all the facts and go, here's the situation, we've got some real problems, and we may need to think a little bit differently. And John Boehner was asked about it. He was asked about some of the things that are going around the super committee. And I love the fact that he came out and said that, well, Norquist is just some random guy. Some random guy, John, who you signed his pledge. Now, what happened this week, and I don't know if you saw it, Jake, but 40 Republicans signed a letter saying, you know what, there's nothing wrong with considering all the options. We need to start looking at other stuff.
And Did you notice where a lot of them come from, Rick?
Well, a lot of them are Tea Party types who are going, I want my job.
Well, also, so some of the senators come from progressive states, come from states where Republican moderation is usually the hallmark of the state, and they know they're going to be in for a tough election, and they're backing off and they're being a little more realistic. First and foremost, Mr. Brown from Massachusetts. I mean, he's dead in the water if he doesn't rescind that. Because he has a tough opponent.
And I like her. I think that the thing that happened yesterday, I think she handled really well. I don't know if someone would have called me a socialist or if I would have stood there and took it.
Oh.
I'd have probably grabbed him and given a couple of poundings. But, I felt for the guy. And we talked about this last night. He went to the meeting, and you could tell. You almost picked him out of the room because here was a guy, you could tell he was down on his luck. He'd been unemployed for a while. You could tell he was, but you also could tell when he stood up and he said, I don't want anything to do with you, that he's been spoon-fed all of this right-wing propaganda that he's bought into. Because he... Again, it's not that they're misinformed. It's that they're informed in only one thought process. So,
I think she can win if she doesn't take a vacation 3 weeks out.
Or go skiing, right, or go right, jet skiing.
Like the last senatorial race up there.
No, I think she'll work her behind off, and hopefully she will be a senator there. But the thing is Norquist said, you can consider all of that stuff, but at the end you just don't vote for any tax increases, which is kind of Boehner's position. Now there's some talk that the grand plan may be in the works because it's obvious to most insiders that the commission, there's going to be no. The Republicans are not moving on the tax issue. Toomey is not going to move on the tax issue. I don't care what anybody says. But we'll see. But I loved Boehner's response also. He said, our focus here is on jobs. I'm going, really? What focus was that? Because all I saw was a bunch of nonsense. We're talking about the Forgotten 15. The Forgotten 15. You know why they were forgotten? Because they suck. They're the same bad ideas that got us into the mess we're into now. Amazing. Just nuts. I was looking at the Wall Street Journal yesterday. And, you look at some of the polling numbers that have come out. And, even Tea Party people are saying don't cut Social Security. And, I think everybody agrees that we need to increase revenue. We need to cut some spending where we need to. But I think most working class people are saying, Social Security, last resort, last thing on the table. Medicare, last thing on the table. I'm of the mindset that, if we need to change things, we need to raise revenue. And I know the Republicans are hell-bent against it, but that's what's gotten us into this mess. I mean, you look at since 1979, the top 1% has been rewarded with after-tax dollars, 270% increase, 275% increase. Folks at the bottom over that same period have only seen an 18% increase. I'm sorry. There's a distribution problem there. And I know the Tea Party people all tingly in the panties about their side winning. But is that the kind of distribution you want? And I know hell-bent against redistribution of wealth. That's what Obama wants. Which part of redistribution were you against? Were you against the part where they redistributed it from me to them and from you to them? No, you weren't. Didn't hear anybody screaming about that. We just kind of put our heads down and we took it. And people are in the streets today because they've had enough. And on every issue, you go down the line, Republicans are on the wrong side of it. And you look at the fact that what's going on in Iraq. 75% of the people are supportive of getting the hell out of Iraq. So what do you hear the Republicans talking about? Well, every Republican except Ron Paul, and he wants to get out of everywhere. He wants to bring every troop home from everywhere around the world. Romney said it was an astonishing failure. Naked political calculation or sheer ineptitude. Michelle Bachmann said it was a political decision opposed to a military one. She says, we've been ejected from a country by the people that we liberated, and that the United States paid for with precious blood and treasure. Do you see any kind of weirdness in that statement? We've been ejected from a country of people that we liberated. They threw us out. They don't want us there. Kind of tells you what they think of that liberated thing. And Gingrich and Rick Santorum, well, they said it shows that we've lost the war. I say we won. Did exactly what you said you were going to do. Took out Hussein. They're now a functioning democracy. Get the hell out. That's my thought on it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mark Price, a labor economist over at Keystone Research, right back after this.
Get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So the economy added 80,000 jobs last month. They say that the unemployment rate ticked down by a percent to 0.1% to 9%. 104,000 private sector jobs. While the cut and punish Republicans saw to it that the public sector lost 24,000. So there's your quick math, 80,000. Not even keeping up with the demographic growth of the country. Yet all I keep hearing is cut and punish. I think we're on the wrong path. That's why I've asked our good friend Mark Price, labor economist over at the Keystone Research Center, to come talk to us about the numbers and some other things. Mark, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Pleasure to be here.
80,000 jobs. Sounds good, right? 80,000?
You know, it's the era of diminished expectations.
It's not 900,000 lost like when Obama took office.
Right, yeah.
I think people forget that. Yeah. I think, they say, well, the president hasn't created jobs. Do you remember where we started from?
I think probably the most painful way to express today's pace of growth was from Dean Baker. His estimate is that at 80,000 jobs a month, we would get back to full employment in 33 years.
And I'll be dead by then.
That's right. That's a painful way to look at it. But yes, Yeah, it's a, you know, it was, it given how bad things have been, you know, everyone is sort of joyous. I should say everyone, but a large number of people probably going to look at this jobs report and, you know, have a sigh of relief. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just the pace of growth isn't enough. And we're seeing the same pattern of, you know, public sector job losses, like you noted in the outset. One of the things we've looked at in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania's actually been losing jobs in the last 5 months. We're down 24,000, and that's being driven basically by public sector job losses.
So let me ask you this. You know, as we're losing these public sector jobs, you know, these are people who did things that we as a state have, I don't know what it is they were doing, but clerical work or sweeping the streets or paving roads or, you know, doing whatever. How much down the road is it going to cost us? Because I'm assuming most of those tasks were then privatized. And I go back to the guy I met in Wisconsin who was retiring from the state to take a private sector job doing the exact same job he was doing for the state. In fact, doing the exact job for double the income.
Right, yeah. No, we've seen, you know, a number of you know, reports that sort of document that when, you know, when the public sector work is privatized, it ends up costing the taxpayer more money. I think what we're seeing here, mostly in Pennsylvania and around the country, there are a fair number of non-teachers, but the bulk of the job loss at the moment seems to be in the educational sector. So, you know, that's sort of feeding over for kids who are, you know, finding themselves with, you know, a lot more classmates in the same room than they used to. But I think you're absolutely right. To the extent that you're losing public sector workers in other fields, you know, cities are either going without certain key services, so, you know, roads won't be plowed as much. There'll be fewer cops on the beat. There'll be fewer people, you know, repairing things when, you know, a storm destroys some part of the city.
Putting off down the road. We're wishing, hoping, and praying that nothing bad happens, because if it does, we don't have the money to fix it. On the education front, I'm waiting for the day here in Pennsylvania where, you know, fire marshal goes into the school and incites a kindergarten class like they did in Michigan for having 55 kids in a kindergarten class.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, or the more scary outcome, right? We've got all these bridges and that need repair and no money to repair them. And, you know, neither Congress nor the Pennsylvania legislature is taking any steps to move forward to repair bridges. We're going to have to do it. You know, it's just a matter of time, and it seems everyone's twiddling their thumbs rather than taking action.
No, I've taken the position that I think there are some folks who are trying to thin the herd, and they hope when the bridges collapse, they'll take some people with them, so there won't be as many people, and there'll be some jobs available, because I'm sure those people who were out on the bridges had jobs, so it'd be good for the economy. It's the whole concept of disaster capitalism. The more disaster we can create, the more crumbling of our country we can create, the more profit there'll be for the corporation, the corporate form.
That's a scary world, Rick.
But I don't think I'm all that far off if you look at what's going on.
No, I mean, you know, it is a bleak environment where the people whose job it is basically to make sure that, you know, public needs get met are sort of being obstinate and choosing not to meet them. It is really remarkable. I mean, especially, you know, you probably have heard, you know, what happened in the Senate on Thursday night. You know, there was a bipartisan bill to expand spending on infrastructure, and basically a minority of people in the Senate filibustered and killed the bill.
Because we want to drill, baby, drill.
Exactly. It is a very bizarre sort of period we're in.
But here's the thing, Mark. In God we trust.
Well, you know, you do have to take care of the priorities.
And, you know, I go, okay, we got that out of the way. And I'm one who likes to think that history repeats itself. So we've done this. And the last, you know, when we first did this, when we first made the country, the official motto of the country, In God We Trust, was 1956. Up until that point, it had been the E Pluribus Unum. But, you know, in 56, we decided, In God We Trust, we're going that direction. In 1956, and you can check this, they pushed through one of the largest infrastructure spending bills in the history of the country that built the Eisenhower Interstate System. So we've done the God thing. I'm with you. Okay. We've reaffirmed that. Can we do the road building thing too?
Yeah, that would be nice, as opposed to, you know, having to say a little prayer every time you drive over a bridge, right?
Well, there, that's one I didn't think of. See?
You're on your own.
That's why you're the smart guy. That's why you're the expert here. Have given me, maybe that's the rationale. So let me ask you, as a labor economist, as the great labor economist, how do we turn this thing around? I mean, what I'm looking at in Washington, I don't see any hope.
Yeah, no, and neither do I. I mean, there just seems to be.
Well, let me just shoot myself now then.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm sorry. I wish I could give you hope. We know what the solution is. I mean, the solution is you've got to spend money. You've got to, you know, extend state aid to local governments and to help sort of prevent teacher layoffs. You've got to invest in infrastructure, and you've got to extend unemployment insurance. And each of those pieces just seems unable to get enough votes in Congress. And I think, you know, it's things are made worse by the fact that, you know, we are in the middle of a presidential campaign. I think it's easy to get distracted from. It shouldn't be easy to get distracted given that, you know, unemployment's at 9%. But, you know, again, it's in a situation where there's a big enough minority to prevent careful action. And sometimes it seems like it's, you know, designed basically, you know, if you do anything that helps the economy, you're helping the existing incumbent in the White House. And it's become political, which is quite unfortunate.
And
I don't see anything changing unless, you know, either the situation gets worse or, you know, more, you know, town squares get occupied.
Or more town squares have to turn off the lights, like in Michigan, in Highland Park, Michigan, where they didn't just turn off the power. The lights, they didn't just turn the lights off. They actually pulled the poles up, the light poles, and they're selling them.
Oh, well, that's how
broke they are. And, you know, to highlight the fact that these towns and these cities and these states are broke, this is a perfect example. Now, they couldn't pay their electric bills, so they shut the lights off. Now they're ripping up the poles to sell the poles.
You know, there were a pair of guys in Pittsburgh who were, you know, trying to cart off a bridge. So, you know, maybe we should get out in front of our local government.
Amazing stuff. So let's say you had the wand. What's the answer here? I've been of the mindset that government has to be the employer of last resort because obviously business is not going to do it.
Right.
How do we get this thing jump started? I mean, they've done a nice job of stabbing in the heart Keynesian theory. How do we get this moving?
Yeah. Well, I mean, simple thing first is you do no harm, and so two simple ways not to do harm. One, you want to extend unemployment benefits. For another year, the estimate, because if unemployment benefits aren't extended, I mean, there are people now that are losing their jobs, even as we speak, and each month, and those folks are coming into a labor market, they're facing twice as many people as they used to when they're looking for a job, so it takes longer. If unemployment benefits expire after December, those folks are going to have less income, that's going to lead to less spending, and, you know, the current estimate is that'll you know, bleed another 500,000 jobs out of the economy, right? So it's sort of job losses on top of the public sector job losses we're seeing. So you want to do no harm and extend unemployment insurance. You also want to do proactive things like investment in infrastructure, which helps create jobs in the construction sector. It also long-term, you know, reduce business costs and you know, hopefully raises wages for workers. But, you know, those are simple things that you can do, and we know what, you know, the steps are. It's just, again, there's no political will, not enough people with the vision that, you know, we're going to take, you know, the hard choices and spend money on infrastructure. We're going to extend unemployment benefits. We're going to, you know, move forward with policies that helpfully boost employment.
So let's look at this from a different angle. Let's say we don't extend unemployment. And all those, we boot all those people off unemployment and they suffer. And then they go out into the streets and they riot and they carry on and they, you know, they basically live in the streets. So we have mass suffering, mass pain. Do you think that would jumpstart the idea of getting, spending on infrastructure? Do you think the Republicans would get it then?
No, I think, basically we've got to go through another election. So we are in a bit of a straitjacket, right? That, we need Obama administration is sort of not itself always making the right call on a lot of policy issues, and you know, it's sort of making it much harder to clearly distinguish between the two parties on these key issues.
Yeah, Colombia.
You know, for instance, you know, 60 folks in Congress, you know, told the super committee that it's okay to cut Medicare. It's sort of they're working very hard to make it impossible to distinguish between the two parties.
Yeah, they all seem to be the Wall Street party.
Right.
So let me ask you this. You know, I saw the Fed is, I guess at this point, not doing anything. It was the kind of the thought that I got from them. They're not going to try and do anything. I'm going to leave that to Congress. What should the Fed be doing?
First of all, I have to laugh because that was one of the most bizarre Fed, minutes we have seen in a long time, right? Oh, my goodness. We've looked at the data. We've looked at the numbers. The economy's growing more slowly, and we're going to do nothing. we live in very strange times. There's not a lot that the Fed can do at this stage. I mean, they've been trying some things to help, bring down interest rates. There are some, they can always be more creative, but I think at this point they really are. There's not a lot more that they can do. We get a lot more effectiveness if we can get action out of Congress. Like I said, I'm not expecting that unless we get an election, but you never know. You know, you're right. We could get lucky. There may be movement on any number of these issues just because the overwhelming, sort of public view of a lot of these issues will push people. I mean, one example is unemployment insurance. I mean, a lot of local congressmen, regardless of their party, often do get that. You know, they've got big manufacturers that have workers that rely on and depend on unemployment insurance when that manufacturer shrinks.
Right.
So you do get surprising levels of support across party lines for doing things like extending unemployment benefits. So I think there's a vague possibility that we'll get more out of Congress. But the Fed's role here, they are pretty limited in what they can do just because, again, interest rates are already practically zero.
Last question I got for you, or last line of question. Earlier in the week, I got into my way back machine. I went and took time travel back 10 years when the Fed was worried what they were going to do because we were paying the debt off so fast. They had no idea what they were going to do. Greenspan said, we don't know what the future looks like. We're going to be debt free. And you go, in just 10 years, we have gone from the future's so bright, I've got to wear shades, to, oh, my God, the sky is falling.
Yeah.
And I go back and I go, there are a couple of very key things that you have to blame it on. And Obama ain't it.
Sure. Right. I mean, unfunded wars, large-scale tax cuts, and then, worst recession since the Great Depression. Those things together, that's certainly not the current, occupant of the White House's fault. There's no question about that. But, how quickly we've forgotten our history.
Yeah, and, I go back to that. And, Greenspan didn't know what he was going to do. Had not a clue. I think I got the clip somewhere. It's just amazing. Anyway, Mark Price, I appreciate the time. Our good friend at the Keystone Research Center, labor economist. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
Always great talking to you. Quick break. Back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280 That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Every time I hear this song, it just makes me chuckle. Get on board the Herman Cain train. Could that be harassment? Could it? Could that be something that, I don't know. Herman got himself into a whole world of trouble. And, you know, they're saying, oh, it's a high-tech lynching. I'm going, really? Herman, the guy who's the unorthodox candidate playing the race card? Really? He was giving a speech today. And you gotta give the guy credit when you've got to kiss up to the Koch brothers, you do it in a big way. So he had.
I am the Koch brothers' brother from another mother.
There you go.
Yes, I'm their brother from another mother, and proud of it.
And I was going to say he doesn't have to really brown nose, and if he does, we wouldn't know. Because look, all of the Republican candidates have got their heads so far up the Koch's behind, it's scary. And like Romney said, you know, they are the engine of the Tea Party. They're the money machine, man. Sad. So with him being the brother. He's trying to suck up and get their endorsement. I'm not so sure. I think that Romney's going to be their guy because after all, he's the Wall Street insider. So we'll see how it goes. But you know, I've been kind of laughing at this whole, how this whole thing is unfolded. Now, sexual harassment is very serious and I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at how this is all unfolded. And I look at the Cain campaign saying that they're considering suing Politico, which good luck on that. What I think would happen if he did, and I don't think he's going to, I think he has to put that face out there that, yeah, well, we're gonna sue them. He has to do that for show. If he did, I think all of those clauses to keep people's mouths shut go away. Those people get pulled into court. And then it all comes out. So I don't think he's really going to want to do that. He's going to grandstand. He's going to do a lot of stuff. But I really don't think he's going to want to go down the I'm going to sue path. And, in fact, I think the campaigns are trying to pull back because they canceled the big interview with his wife, Gloria, on fake news on Fox. So they pulled her out of that because, I don't know that you really want to get her involved in it because – who knows how she reacts? You know, when you put Hillary Clinton out in front of a microphone, she'll keep the party line like she did. But I would have watched that interview, Jake. I would have watched Gloria Cain on fake news on Fox, just hoping that maybe they would have asked a question that wasn't scripted.
You think she's staying by her man? I think so.
Oh, I think so.
You know, as I've seen and as America has seen time and time again, the worst part is denying what happened. I think America, look, I mean, yes, he's a conservative candidate, and they tend to look at moral issues. But you know what? If he would have come out and said, hey, look, this happened a bunch of years ago. I made a stupid mistake.
Exactly.
I asked for forgiveness of the women.
Way
I shouldn't have
come.
Done it. I shouldn't have done it. You know, God forgive me. And put it behind him. Instead, he's denying it. And when he denies it, he gets himself deeper and deeper and deeper in
the hole.
And
why don't we get that? Why don't men get that? It's not just politicians. I think it's all men. But why don't these politicos get it? Just come out, take your comeuppance, take your, you know, your beating for the short period, but be honest about it. It defies logic. You know, when Wiener was going through his whole thing, when someone asks you something that specific, they know. So you be honest about it. He did everything you could possibly do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I still don't think he should have resigned. I think that's for the voters to decide. But that's water under the bridge at this point.
What Cain has done, once you lie, then it's not just a matter of sexual harassment or forgiveness. Then it's a matter of integrity.
Yep.
Can we trust this man?
So evidently the restaurant association, after the woman said that she didn't really want to get into it, because she's kind of backed out of coming public. And I don't think I would want to either. And I wouldn't want, you know, my wife or my daughter or anybody I know to throw themselves in the middle of that. Politico found out. They probably pulled her into it. Someone, you know, leaked it to them. For her sake, I would stay the hell out of it. But, you know, there's part of me that also says you got to wonder who got to her to say, look, we'll make your life a living you-know-what if you come out against this guy. And I don't know that I would get into it. But the Restaurant Association after, and you got to wonder if that was choreographed as well. That after she said that, you know what, I've said as much as I'm going to say, this is as far as I'm going, and then they come out with, oh, yeah, we would have let her say whatever she wants. What I'd like to see now is her come out and say, yeah, well, I'll take you up on that. But it's not going to happen. So Rick Santorum, he's been kicking around Iowa, kicked off his Faith, Family, and Freedom Tour. Faith, Family, and Freedom Tour. That phrase sounds familiar. Faith, Family, and Freedom. Oh, yeah. The award that the Family Research Council gave to deadbeat dad, Joe Walsh, a Republican from Illinois. In fact, they gave him the support of, you know, the Faith, Family, and Freedom Award because he's worthy of their admiration. He has unwavering support of the family. Unwavering support, except he doesn't want to pay for them. But anyway, Tricky Ricky kicked off the Faith, Family, and Freedom Tour, doing the whole social thing because he really has nothing else. You know, basically going around saying, hey, let's get rid of the Ninth Circuit of Appeals. Let's make, you know, let's make personhood for an amendment to the Constitution. Yes. Go back to the don't ask, don't tell, you know, all that stuff. Reinstitute the Mexico policy. Stop taxpayer funding or promotion of abortions overseas. Make sure we make sure that those people over there, they either learn abstinence or they learn nothing. And I look at this guy and I go, really, do you have nothing better to do? I mean, you see what the Republicans are doing. Nothing. Where are the jobs? You know, I got that crummy pledge. It's kind of fallen off my desk at this. I've got it somewhere around here. But the pledge, what happened to the pledge? What happened to the laser-like focus on jobs, jobs, jobs? What happened to that? I know, you got the forgotten 15. Yeah, yeah. The 15 bad ideas that were bad 20 years ago. Great, new ideas that failed 20 years ago. Yeah, let's talk about that again. Nothing out of them, though. No vision, no leadership, no idea, no clue. And we're going to struggle because of it. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, talk a little bit about personhood. I guess corporations are people, right? Maybe not. Back after this. I'm taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking
for. Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 60 protesters from Occupy Chicago, Stand Up Chicago, and several unions disrupted Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's speech on state budget reforms in Chicago Thursday. The protesters bought tickets to the speech and were seated at tables. They interrupted Walker as he began to speak.
Governor Walker is vilified!
Governor Walker is vilified!
For you,
Leah Edmonds was one of the 60 who gave Governor Walker a dose of the people's mic.
It was people from Chicago's Teachers Union, from Service Employees International Union, to be there with a bunch of community and labor allies, all of us standing together. It felt very powerful to be able to speak to Governor Walker in that way.
After about 15 minutes, the protesters inside left with no arrests, chanting as they went. To help heal America's economy, National Nurses United has just a prescription, a meaningful financial transaction tax on Wall Street. The Registered Nurses Union was on the march Thursday in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, San Francisco, and at the G20 meeting in France. About 1,500 nurses, joined by the AFL-CIO, Occupy Wall Street activists, and other supporters, rallied outside the White House and marched to the Treasury Department in Washington. Liz Jacobs was one of the National Nurses United RNs taking part in the San Francisco action.
There's an unhealthy economy, and we know what the solution is, and we need to go to where the revenue is that will heal America, and that is Wall Street and a tax on Wall Street.
Red Cross workers in Connecticut are on strike today after they failed to reach an agreement with the blood supply organization. Jesse Russell reports.
The workers represented by Ask Me Council 4 are walking picket lines in Norwalk and Farmington, calling attention to 2 years of working without a contract. The primary issue holding up talks is the number of licensed nurses required at blood drives. The Red Cross has consistently lowered the number over the years, and the workers are concerned it raises safety issues. Other disagreements involve health care and scheduling. The Red Cross workers have additionally expressed frustration over the way the organization has treated them during the contract negotiations. The National Labor Relations Board has filed a number of lawsuits against the Red Cross for violations of unfair labor practices. Disaster workers are not on strike, minimizing the impact of the strike on relief from the storms that have hit New England in the past week. The Red Cross has been importing extra blood reserves from other states into Connecticut since the union made it known a walkout was on the horizon.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is What Democracy Looks Like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind? You can also email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So there are about a half a dozen states, you know, Mississippi, Florida, Ohio, who have got anti-abortion measures on the ballot. Basically, the idea is to declare a fertilized human egg as a legal person. And that leads to a whole bunch of really weird kind of legal outcomes, I think. Too broad, too much, too open to interpretation. In fact, even a lot of the Republicans, Haley Barbour for one, kind of going, nah, a little bit too far for us. But you look at Arkansas in May, they may have one of these personhood amendments on their ballot. And the people over at the Center for Reproductive Rights have come up with approximately 600 new state regulations this year alone. And again, for me, this whole attack is not about Roe versus Wade. It's about Griswold. It's about taking contraceptive family planning away from people. And you look in Wisconsin, they just passed a abstinence-only bill prohibiting teachers from talking about anything having to do with contraception. And, you know, it's this kind of head-in-the-sand stuff that gets people into trouble. I mean, I'm I got to be honest. I'm worried about the future. I don't know if you saw this. Next Tuesday, voters in Virginia, they're going to be deciding whether they want to elect the former state representative David Black as a state senator. Fortunately for the folks in Virginia, Black has a substantial record by which you can judge him. In 2005, he proposed investigating all Virginians to see if any of them who were gay adopted children. So he was kind of against that. That was one of his proposals. He also is well known for sending plastic fetuses to lawmakers to advertise his anti-abortion stance. Also, he fought to allow pharmacies to refuse to sell birth control, again, going back to what I said about Griswold. But he still had his shining moment ahead of him. He still had that shining moment because he said about the prosecution of a spousal rape case in 2002. How on earth, and I'm still kind of just amazed at this, how on earth could you validly get a conviction in a husband-wife rape when they're living together, sleeping in the same bed, and she is in a nightie? If I need to explain that to you, we have a serious problem. We have a serious problem. And you're probably the last guy that should be sitting in any power position. Because understand, rape, understand sexual harassment, those are power grabs. And I look at this recent University of Michigan study that found 9 out of 10 women, 9 out of 10, said that they've experienced sexual offensive sexual remarks, or have been told that they could not do their jobs properly because of their sex. Now, 1 in 10 women claim that they've been promised promotions or better treatment if they would just be, a little cooperative here or there, a little copy room tryst. And, the more I think about this thing with Herman Cain, to me it shows the abuse of power. It shows me an arrogance. And I think back to when I first started dating my wife, who worked for a guy who, as I remember, there were only female employees. And she would come home and she would tell me some of the, some of the nonsense that he would say. And, she blew it off. Ah, he's just joking. And I was like, he's not joking. The whole, hey, we can get a room and share a hot tub thing, that's not a joke. Hey, you want to move up and be, a supervisor? Well, we can make that happen. That's not a joke. And I remember at the time going, all it takes is your word, and I'm down there kicking the snot out of him. It means you're probably going to lose your job, but I'll feel a lot better. And maybe that's what we need to go back to. My grandfather was always a big fan of making a citizen out of somebody. A couple of good slaps across the head, make a citizen out of someone. Maybe the days where, people don't fear that anymore. I think we've become a society where we don't fear repercussion. Where I grew up when I was a kid, you said something about somebody's mother, it was throwdown time. That was the end of it. You could rip on each other, you could make fun of each other's girlfriends, whatever, but you said something about mama, day over. And, there's part of me that thinks that, Jake, that maybe, meet me behind the flagpole, ain't going to cut it no more. Maybe we need to, get smack up across the back of the head. Just my thought. But then again, I've never really been the most politically correct when it comes to that. But really, if it's your daughter, if it's your wife, if it's your mother, do you want them in a situation where, hey, he's just joking. He's joking about the hot tub. That's all. He's just being a guy. And look, I'm the first one to say it. For a while, when I started working in the freight industry, you'd see those guys beating up on, saying lewd things around the women. Because you always had one maybe worked in the office, or maybe one that was a dock supervisor, heaven forbid. And you'd get people who would just say the vilest, hey, let's see how far we can go. Now that I'm a little bit older, probably not the right thing to do. Not that I ever did it, but I was around people who did. And I, there are times I feel bad for not speaking up where I should have. And maybe it's a change in culture. and maybe having this discussion with the Herman Cain train, maybe will be a learning experience. You know, maybe, because you see it. You do. You see people saying dumb things. Whether they think they mean it or not, they mean it. Because we're guys. I mean, I guess that's just how our brains are wired somewhat. But it's interesting to see this whole thing develop in the whole, well, you know, it's just a high-tech lynching. And I still love Ann Coulter.
That's why our blacks are so much better than their blacks.
I love her. I love that crazy woman.
Oh.
There's some things that we need to really be thinking about there. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this. A general just got booted out of Afghanistan, this Major General Peter Fuller. It was interviewed by Politico. And to be honest, I don't think he's wrong. He said that the Karzai administration was erratic, saying that the Afghanistan folks would side with Pakistan if Pakistan declared war on the U.S. was probably kind of dumb. He said, why don't you just poke me in the eye with a needle? He said, you got to be kidding me. He said, I'm sorry, we just gave you $11.6 billion and you're telling me I don't really care? And I don't see anything wrong with what he said. He said that the Afghan government is isolated from reality. And he think, you know, that they think that the U.S. is paved with gold. And part of it is we've done some dumb things over there. We've just poured money into that area. There's part of me that says this guy is right, and it's a damn shame he was removed. He said the Afghan leaders don't understand the sacrifices that America is making to provide for their security. And he says, I think that's part of my job to educate them. And, well, they took him out. They have replaced him, and I think that's a bad thing. Because at the end of this, I think the American people have the right idea when it comes to Afghanistan and Iraq. There is no winning here. We've done what we can do. Staying longer, in my opinion, just prolongs a bad situation. Now, I mean, you know, people say, "Well, what if they rise up?" And well, you take care of that by having other people in the region step in. We've done all we can do. I think this is now a job for the international community. Time to get out.
Well, you know, the irony is, and you know, you and I both have a good friend, Rick, and he works in Afghanistan. I don't want to divulge too much, but let me say this. I mean, he has said repeatedly that the soldiers there know, the ones who have the feet on the ground, a good many of them know it's time to leave. It's time to leave. We've accomplished all we can.
And you know what? We're talking about that we can't extend unemployment benefits. We can't rebuild our roads, our bridges. There are folks in the Republican Party who are hell-bent on keeping us there, and it makes no sense. Because I think the people I think the American people have seen it. We've run it. It's run its course. It's time to come home. Pretty simple. If we can't afford to pay doctors and lawyers and teachers, and we can't afford to pay public service workers, and we can't afford to do the things that are going to run this country and get us out of trouble, why in the hell are we over there? Obviously, don't want us. And I think Karzai has been pretty clear about that. And same thing with Iraq. If they don't want you there, how are you a liberator? Now, I go back to that Michelle Bachmann quote. They ejected us, the people who liberated them. That's because they never saw you as a liberator. They saw you as an occupier. So if they have ejected you, that means they don't want you. I think Michelle has a problem with that. Understand, the American people don't want you. In fact, they don't want you as much as the Iraqis don't want us there. Time for her to drop out, even though I do find her comical. But, you know, when you look at this, if we don't have money to educate children here in this country, we don't have money to make sure that children in this country have health insurance. What the hell are we doing everywhere else going, oh, yeah, let's help them? And that's where I agree with some of the T-Twizzlers. You know, before we go shipping money overseas, maybe start doing some things here. Now, I'm in favor of helping places where we can, but at the end of the day, we got to take care. Charity starts at home. You fix your roads and bridges at home. You fix your schools and your hospitals and all this stuff here at home. You know, I look at Carlisle Hospital, a report in the paper today, not doing so well. A whole bunch of violations, didn't get their accreditation. Why? Staffing levels. Why? Contracting problems. We're using outsourced folks. It's mind-blowing. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's take a quick break. Back after this.
You and me, but we're not unarmed. A weapon solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood. The list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Tell me with whom you walk, goes the old adage, and I'll tell you who you are. Maybe you're wondering just who the heck this Rick Perry guy is. This loud-talking, slow-thinking Texas buckaroo who says he should be your president. His PR storyline is that he's just a straight-talking conservative politico out of Paint Rock, Texas. But it's been ages since Perry walked with the good folks of Paint Rock. Now in his 27th year in political office, this guy has consistently walked with Mr. Money and been the loyal servant of the corporate powers. Let's take a peek at Perry's piggy bank. Not his personal money, though it is curious how he became a millionaire while doing nothing but government work. Rather, check out the Texas Enterprise Fund, a stash of some $400 million tax dollars that Governor Perry has essentially used as a political slush fund. TEF is supposed to be a cache of state cash for him to dole out as incentives for corporations to create jobs. But its job creation performance is somewhere between pathetic and a scam. The fund has, however, been a boon for Perry's re-election campaigns and for the coffers of his corporate benefactors. For example, 20 of the governor's top corporate donors that have put a total of $6.5 million into his electioneering pockets have been rewarded with a stunning $116 million in TEF handouts. In a recent analysis, the watchdog group Texans for Public Justice found that Caterpillar gave $124,000 to Perry and got more than $9 million from TEF. Lockheed Martin put $232,000 in Perry's pay-to-play scheme and got $5 million back in state money. And GE put in $640,000 and got $4 million from the fund. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get the full report on Perry's piggy bank, go to tpj.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it'll probably fail, but our machines don't leave no paper trail.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. So, political season upon us, and in the very small town of New Liberty, Iowa, their ballot is blank. They have nobody running for mayor, no one running for city council, no one running for dog catcher, nothing. But according to the residents, they're okay with it because they know each other, and they'll just write somebody in. And I'm going, really, you don't bother, you know, don't bother having primaries. Don't bother having races. Nah. We'll decide when we get there. So I was thinking about it. If there was somebody you didn't like, you go, we're gonna make you mayor. Just to see him turn it down. Anyway, Representative Keith Ellis, Democrat from Minnesota, he's appealing to the Occupy Wall Street folks, saying, look, you know what? Add to the list of things you got there, voting restrictions. All across this country, we've been seeing reports of state after state run by Republicans going after voting rights. whether it's young folks, whether it's minorities, whether it's low-income folks, whether it's people with disability or seniors. The Republicans have lasered in on how do we hold the vote down? How do we make sure that we can suppress the vote so that they can win? Because understand, 2012 is really a very important election in that if things stay as they are now, you may quite well see another 2 years of gridlock and possibly another 4 years of absolute gridlock, which means as a nation, we don't grow. So we, as a nation of voters, we got to pick an ideology. We got to pick an idea, say, okay, well, what do we do? Do we go the right-wing way of cut, gut, and punish? Do we hand more to the top 1% in the hopes that maybe this time, maybe now that we've given them more than they could possibly ever have wanted, maybe now they'll do what they say they will do and create jobs and leave us a crumb on the floor? I mean, do we double down on the bad policies that got us into this mess? Actually, I would argue quadruple down, because we've been going this path for quite some time now. Do we have another tax reform bill of 86 where we lower that top tax rate down to, 20%, and then do away with all of the deductions, and only in two or three more years they'll all be back for the wealthy and you and I get screwed again? Because remember, out of the tax reform bill of 86, while they love to say how they did away with the loopholes for corporations that are all back and plentiful, you're still being taxed on unemployment benefits, which is one of the things that they took away from us, along with the ability to deduct any credit card interest or any car payment interest or any interest that you paid on bank loans. Took that away, made sure that was gone for you and me. I don't see anybody out there lobbying for us to get that stuff back. And what Ellison's saying, he's going, look, get out there, look at how we get people to the polls. Stop with the suppression. Stop with the curtailing of people's rights. And I think it's a smart move. I'm hoping the Occupy people will pick up on it. And you look at the fact that 196 House Democrats signed a letter to state elections officials saying, hey, please stop the war on voting. Stop this nonsensical attack. And it's only gonna wake people up, I think, until they walk to the polls and someone says, sorry, I know you've been voting here for 20 or 30 or 50 years, but you can't vote because the Republicans have passed this rule or this procedure that completely changes the way we've done things. Because they're looking for a problem for their solution. Because at the end of the day, no one can show me where all this voting fraud's going on. I can find some voting fraud, though. Ann Coulter said she lived one place, voted in another. Mitt Romney, said he lived one place, was actually living in another. There's some voting fraud there. We just don't prosecute that stuff, do we? But the more I look at this, we're going to have to make that choice. The voting people are going to have to choose between, you cannot split the ticket again. You're going to have to decide. Do we want to continue down the same failed path of, here, wealthy, go do something. You're the smart people. You made money. Figure out how to make more and continue outsourcing jobs, continue tax policies that benefit them. Or are we going to say, you know what? We need to have a new deal, if you will. We need to have a fair deal, a square deal, something that's going to reinvest in this nation, put people back to work, reinvesting in roads and bridges and infrastructure, airports, waterways, dams, you name it. There's a lot that needs to be done. That's going to have to be decided at the ballot box, because it's apparent to me, and I think it's apparent to just about everyone, that Washington is not going to come up with a solution. There are no big ideas in D.C. right now. There are no race to the moon. There are no massive interstate development programs. There's none of that. And as I said earlier, I read off a couple of the bills that were passed this week instead of creating jobs. And I'm sure to someone those were very important. But to get this economy moving, to get the country back on the right track, not doing it. That ain't it. So it's about making sure that we come to grips with our own ideology, have our own consistent worldview. and vote for people who are going to say, you know what, let's invest in this country for a change. Instead of, now, how frustrating is it? You know, I got to be honest with you, Jake. You know, the Democratic Party has kind of let me down in a lot of ways. You know, I look at these trade deals. More bad job-killing trade deals. That's what the Republicans chose to move out of Obama's job plan. And it shows to me sometimes that the Democrats are pretty dumb when it comes to negotiating. The parts that were in there to entice the Republicans to pass things that would help us, the negatives that were in the bill, they let them pass, and all the stuff that would help us, they filibustered. And Democrats have done nothing.
Well, at the end of the day, and I agree, we tend to blame the Republicans, and rightfully so, but on many issues, including health care, including free trade, what does it come down to? It comes down to the corroding influence of money. That is a huge, gigantic, it's the 1,000-pound gorilla. And I don't know the answer, because you're going to have to persuade the very people who have prospered, and prospered mightily, let's not kid ourselves, you're going to have to persuade them to change the system. And short of that, you're going to have to get them out of office, and you're going to have to fight that just huge wave of money. It does not put the American people in a good light. Does not put them in the American people, sadly, American people and their freedoms are the back against the wall.
Yeah, I look at that kid, the guy who went to Elizabeth Warren's meeting, to her town hall, and called her a socialist whore. I don't want anything to do with you because you're that Occupy Wall Street person. And that's what he's been told constantly. The megaphone of the mega rich has been in his ear constantly. The wealth class has his full, undivided attention. The Tea Party, funded by the engine of the Tea Party, the Koch brothers, have his undivided attention, and they have sold him a bill of goods that has put him in this position. Look, I'm as anti-government as anybody when it comes to the bad things they do. But look, at the end of the day, there are some things only we can do through our government. And there are some things that I want private, for-profit corporations to do. I want them making my tennis shoes and my jeans, and I want them building cars, and I want them doing all of those things. But when it comes to health care, I'm going to trust the government to pay for it. I think you need to have a pool. And whether it's, and there's part of me that says, I don't care whether it's a government pool or it's a profit for, if it's a private pool. It's got to be a pool, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be part of all of us. But they're doing everything they can do to divide. And I look at that, I go back to that guy, and I know so many people like him who have, you know, they've been in that little group who all they hear a constant drumbeat of government bad, small government, limited government. And when you hear that, it's ineffective.
And you know what's sad, Rick? I mean, we boast to the rest of the world that we're the best and we're the shining star and we're the shining light. You know what? This country can easily, it doesn't have to be a national, it doesn't have to be socialized medicine. It doesn't, and certainly that we don't want what we have, but we can come up with our own Americanized system to provide health care for every American at a reasonable price. It can be done if you take the corroding influence of money and political power and corporate power. We can do it. There are other countries who are infinitely poor, who have far less resources, who have better health care systems. And we as a nation should look at that and say, come on, we can do better.
Mike Bloomberg surprised me yesterday. He said, we have presidential candidates who don't believe in science. I mean, just to show you where the Republican mindset is. Now, this is Bloomberg, who is a Republican. I guess he was a Democrat for a while. I guess he's now an independent. He says, we've got presidential candidates who don't believe in science. He says, I mean, just think about it. Can you imagine a company of any size in the world where the CEO said, I don't believe in science? And that person surviving to the end of the day, he goes, are you kidding me? It's mind-boggling. And you look at some of the names of the companies that would boggle Bloomberg's mind. The Koch brothers, who run Koch Industries. The CEO of Whole Foods is John Mackey. Ryanair CEO Michael Leary. Exxon Mobile CEO Rex Tillerson, all these folks don't believe in it. This is why I'm telling you, folks, we've got to make this choice at the ballot box. Because Republicans, what they want to do is those are the people who run this country, ExxonMobil, Koch brothers. Those are now family, those are now household names. We know who they are. And now you look under the guise of a transportation bill. You got every single Republican, with the exception of Olympia Sundino, who voted to suspend the Clean Air Act on toxic emissions from industrial boilers, cement factories, and waste incinerators. Every Democrat, except for Joe Manchin, voted against the bill. And you go, what are we doing? Is this what we're going to do to create jobs? Give up our air, give up our water, give up our environment? That's what the Republicans want. Drill, baby, drill. And like Corbett said, maybe we should put gas wells on school property. Put it right next to the lunchroom. In fact, maybe we could just tap it right out of the ground and use it to generate heat in the schools. Just a thought. Let's take a quick break. Right back with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. We'll be right back after this.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
I'm David Thorne, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. While the rest of the news media is all Herman Cain all the time, we're going to move in a little different direction. We're going to talk with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
It has been all Herman all day. Let's not talk about him.
Let's not.
Let's just put that behind us. What's going on overseas? The Greek president, did he get the vote?
Yes, Prime Minister Papandreou narrowly survived a no-confidence vote late Friday night, but he's prepared to step down to make way for a bipartisan government that would approve Greece's latest international bailout deal and pave the way to elections. Quite a thing, really. Now, he says he's going to explore the composition of a transitional unity government in a meeting with the president tomorrow. But it doesn't really resolve the continuing political drama, including the composition of the next government. So it's all very, very, very complicated. But basically, it staves things off. There will be some kind of a unity government. Whether it'll be a very quick government or whether it'll be government going on for a few months isn't quite clear. But the thing is that it gets us through for a little while. They will probably get their next tranche of money in the middle of December, which is when they need it,
right,
and we'll be able to move forward. The difficulty really is now really moves to Italy. I mean, that doesn't mean to say that Greece is out of the woods by any step of any kind of imagination, but the difficulty really moves to Italy, and they, of course, are now under the eye of the IMF.
It's interesting. I've been kind of watching from the distance how Sarkozy and some of the others have looked to Obama to kind of step in, and he really hasn't made, at least I don't think he's made any real commitments to Greece.
No. Well, we have said all along, the U.S. has, and it's been very, very clear, and he has stayed very much on message while he's been overseas, that the Europeans can get them, you know, the Europeans have the resources to deal with this, which is the U.S. way of saying, we're not spending a dime on you.
Yeah, but the question is, how deep are our banks into this? How intertwined is the international banking system that eventually it comes back on us anyway?
We're all very intertwined. Stock market and the bond markets are terribly, terribly intertwined. There's no question about it. It's one of the reasons why everybody reeled and roiled when Papandreou announced earlier in the week that he was going to have this referendum after the Eurozone deal had already been arranged. Everyone was just shocked and surprised and horrified that he was going to do this because it was unnecessary.
And what we're not seeing any way of putting up capital borders or any way of staving off another situation like this into the future. We're just doubling down and saying, well, let's cozy up even more, it seems to me. Again, bad direction. Good sign for me here, though. It looks, I guess, Google considering leaving the International Chamber of Commerce?
Yes. They're very frustrated, Google is, with the chamber support for legislation that would force Internet companies to police websites that peddle pirated movies and fake Viagra. Yahoo just left the chamber in October, largely over the chamber's support of Senator Patrick Leahy's online piracy bill called the Protect IP Act. And a source close to Google, which usually means somebody inside Google, said the company is frustrated about paying dues to an organization promoting legislation that would basically, quote, impose new liabilities, unquote, on Google. But a second source close to the company confirmed that thinking. But then the Consumer Electronics Association, one of the country's largest trade groups, is also thinking about leaving the chamber over its aggressive campaign for this same Senate bill and the companion bill introduced in the House last week, the Stop Online Piracy Act. Because this bill, these bills, would require search engines and online ad companies to clamp down on websites that illegally peddle copyrighted movies, fake pharmaceuticals, and other counterfeit products, if served with a court order by the Justice Department. And CEA and some Google executives have publicly argued that the bills would threaten innovation and encourage censorship of protected speech on the web. And many in the tech industry believe the chamber's doing the bidding of Hollywood and other deep-pocketed members of the content industry.
Yeah, I just don't know how you would enforce it, though. I mean, it is such a vast operation. I don't know how you would get in and enforce it without really infringing on I guess there really is no privacy on the Internet, but I just don't know how you'd enforce it.
Exactly. So it's possible that Google's going to leave the chamber. That would be quite a big leave. I mean, with Yahoo also, you know, as you know, online piracy isn't the only policy that's been putting the chamber in hot water recently. There have been utility companies, Exelon, Pacific Gas and Electric Co., PNM Resources, and Apple. They all left in 2009 to protest the chamber's stance on global warming.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the wrong side of a lot of issues. They were supposed to be the people who promote business. Now they seem to be just a propaganda arm of the Republican Party, much like fake news on Fox. So the Democrats have a new jobs plan. What's wrong with the ones we had before? There's another new jobs bill coming out?
Well, no, it's the same jobs bill, but the plan is to actually try to get the jobs, to get it through. Basically, they like the jobs bill, but they know that they're not getting anything passed. So what the Senate Democrats are doing is they're going to try to attach legislation that provide businesses with incentives to hire unemployed and disabled veterans. They're going to attach that to a bill that's already been passed in the House. and the Republicans are begging the Senate to pass, which is controlled by Democrats.
Right.
And that bill repeals a rule requiring governments to withhold 3% of large contractor payments so firms can't cheat on their taxes, which is something that Republicans want. So they think it's going to be nearly impossible for Republicans to oppose their latest jobs bill, the Vow to Hire Heroes Act, just before Veterans Day.
Oh, yeah. You think they're going to be fazed by that? Come on. They're the kings of fake patriotism.
The Democrats are hoping that, you know, because this bill wouldn't only put veterans to work, it would be paid for by a fee structure for Veterans Affairs Department home loans. It's not going to be paid for by taxes. They really think they're onto something here.
Well, we shall see, because they've you got to give the Republicans credit. They've done a masterful job of standing in the way of any progress. They've done a nice job of filibustering and blocking and gridlock, all that, as you knew they would do. So good for them. Latest jobs reports numbers out. We gained some private sector jobs, lost a bunch of public sector jobs. Again, you know, this whole cut, gut, and punish, costing us jobs that could turn this economy around. But the jobs numbers out?
Yeah, jobs numbers up 104,000 in the private sector, down about 24,000 in the public sector, exactly as you've said. And this has been going on for about a year now in the public sector, losing jobs because state and local governments are trying to deal with deficits, and the way they're doing it is by laying off workers. And so what you see is a net gain of about 80,000 jobs, and that's not even enough to keep up with with population growth. We did see a downtick of the unemployment rate from 9.1 to 9%, so that was good.
Yeah, that's just because people fell off the unemployment rolls.
Well, no, actually, more people were reporting that they were finding work.
Oh, good. Well,
so that was positive.
Yeah, that is positive. But at the end of the day here, you know, I question how many of those public sector jobs that we destroyed, how many of those were picked up in the private sector, and what's it going to cost us down the road?
Well, this is it. It was not stellar news. It was really very mediocre news.
I mean, and I guess it's good news if you look at the political climate, which is doing nothing, nothing positive. In fact, I would argue that everything that's being done is a negative, and I would argue that what the Republicans are doing is creating an environment where businesses are going, well, we don't know what you crazy people are going to do. We're not doing anything either. Just my thought.
You could make that argument.
And I did. The weekend's coming up. I guess you're going to be partaking in one of the new releases this weekend. I guess, what's it called, Puss in Boots?
Puss in Boots is how you say it.
Okay, all right.
With Antonio Banderas.
Aha.
In 3D.
Now I know.
I'll give you a review on Monday.
I cannot wait. And what's the movie?
It's called Puss in Boots.
Yeah, I get that. What's the point?
It's about Puss and his sidekick, Kitty Softpaws, and they have an adventure.
There you go. I'm sure my children will love it as well. But we can't wait for Monday. Let's just bypass the weekend and get right to Monday so we can get your review.
Okay, then.
Thanks so much, Victoria.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. And now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. In a recent meeting of the Elections Board, one of the county commissioners, a Democrat, Mr. Rovigno, who isn't running, made some, I think, rather pointed comments about the attempts to redistrict the 15th senatorial district. And this is what he said. He said, if there's any good reason why someone can give me why someone from the Harrisburg area should represent the citizens of Western Cumberland County, he would like to hear it. He called the recent proposals on the 15th senatorial district the worst case of gerrymandering he has ever seen. Rovigno said the proposed resembles the political cartoon from 1812 that made the word gerrymandering famous, and that was run in the Patriot News earlier in the week. As bad a comment as that was, I think a more pointed comment came actually from a Republican, Barbara Cross, who had also attended the meeting. She said the redistricting doesn't pass the common sense test, regardless of who would hold the 15th Senate seat or where they would live. Cross said the residents of far western Cumberland County would potentially have to, and this is amazing, they would potentially have to go through two different counties to get to the office of Senator Pakola. Now, as bad as that was, I think the editorial board of the Harrisburg Patriot hit it right on. They said what the redistricting committee did in central Pennsylvania is not illegal, but it's blatantly wrong. The panel concocted a horseshoe district that many say was solely to remove Harrisburg from Republican Jeff Pakola's district. And he's going to, according to the redistricting plan, he's going to be responsible for Dauphin, Perry, Adam, York, and Cumberland. My question is, if it isn't illegal, why isn't it? Redistricting is supposed to be done, at least in theory, Rick, in a nonpartisan, non-political manner. This is certainly blatant, and it's done for one reason, and that is to save the political career of a Republican senator, and shame on them. Now, whether something will be done, whether they will take that to court, remains to be seen. I personally hope that they do. Article coming out of Harrisburg, and hopefully maybe this is the last article. It seems that Harrisburg has their last chance to come up with some reasonable compromises on the problem that they have. Among other steps, the plan would raise parking ticket fees. It would eliminate the city's park rangers, and it would implement a hiring freeze with restrictions on overtime for current city employees. The city's government can develop its own long-term recovery plan. I would say at this point, if they don't, and the state takes it over, I think there's going to be some real, real repercussions. I think the council, even though I tend to agree with them on some issues, I think at this point, Rick, they have no alternative but to come up with a reasonable plan of their own to save their city from a disastrous situation. Back to you.
All righty. Well, let's take a quick break. Back after this to wrap things up and head into the weekend.
The Rick Smith Show.
Workers in the late 1930s began exerting their recently guaranteed right to organize and join unions. Millions of workers flocked to join the labor organization of their choosing, to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and working conditions. Factory, mill, and mine owners, not eager to embrace the changes, fought vehemently to deny workers their rights. As company tactics grew more heavy-handed and brutal, the workers' organizing methods changed. Sit-down strikes became a way for workers to demand their rights and to force management to listen. With a wave of a handkerchief, the tip of a hat, workers would shut down their machines, lay down their hammer, and sit down. Workers at the Hershey Chocolate Factory in Hershey, Pennsylvania, seeking to reduce the 60-hour-long work week, decided to form a union. Initially, an agreement was reached, but as the economy took a downturn, the company willfully violated the agreement by laying off the most senior workers, those who just happened to be the most ardent union supporters. The workers voted to strike the very next day. At 11 a.m. on April 2nd, 1937, a red handkerchief was waved and the workers began their first sit-down strike in Pennsylvania's history. The company reacted by forming the Loyal Workers Club. These strikebreakers consisted of hired thugs from New York City and local farmers, dairy producers, and shopkeepers who were dependent on the factory. On April 6, Hershey organized a loyalty parade. After hours of rallying speeches, the lathered-up Loyal Workers Club mob found pipes and clubs that had been manufactured at the Hershey planing mill. The angry mob headed to the Hershey factory to throw their strikers out. Songs of solidarity sung by the striking workers could be heard from inside the factory as the angry mob burst into the plant. plan, blocking the only exit the Loyal Workers Club, loyal only to management and greed, began pummeling the workers as they tried to escape. The assault left numerous workers bloody and beaten, many unconscious. Within days, Hershey reopened and recognized the renamed version of the Loyal Workers Club. In May of 1938, the National Labor Relations Board ruled Hershey had violated the law and the company union was dissolved. Soon, the workers joined the Bakery and Confectionery Workers Local 464, who have faithfully represented the workers ever since. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Any questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. Next Tuesday, Election Day, going to be interesting to see what happens around the country. There's a couple of places where there's some interesting issues on the ballot, and I look at, you look at Maine, for instance, there's a big ballot initiative going on up there, you know, having to do with voting rights, and this group, Yes on One campaign, evidently they've spent $250,000 trying to change the way the folks in Maine register to vote. They're one of the few states that have same-day registration. In fact, they were the first state to have same-day registration. I think it's been somewhat 38 years. I think it was 1973 when Maine became the first state in the nation to pass Election Day registration. Personally, I have no idea why every state doesn't have same-day registration. You look at Iraq. What'd they do in Iraq? They came out with a little stamp pad. Go, okay, put your finger on the pad. Oh, you can vote. Here, we gotta have voter ID cards, we need to have electric bills, we need to have signed affidavits, we need to have, you know, underwear sizes checked. What happened to the ink pad? And I remember the first election, everybody was walking around with their ink finger? But here, I guess we're superior to that. I guess voting is more complex, here in the U.S. And I look at the money, $250,000 in Maine. That's not like, you know, New York or anywhere. $250,000 in Maine is an enormous sum. And right now, you know, people who want to keep same-day registration have a little bit of a lead. The polling right now is at about 48 to 44. I don't know why you'd want to give that up. That makes no sense to me whatsoever why you'd want to give it up. Unless you believe that we can hold those people down. That we don't want the kind of people who have to wait to the last minute to vote. No, no, no. It's just nuts. And you look at what's going on in Ohio. Tuesday, for labor, Tuesday is a huge day when you look at what's going on in Ohio. If they can push back on that issue too and repeal SB 5, that will be a huge step in the right direction. But at the end of the day, all of the money that's been spent, it's going to hurt in the long run. You know, the fact that the Koch brothers never seem to run out of money because they're oil and gas barons. We're basically funding our own demise. And, you know, they're behind a good portion of this. And you look at right now that one of these right-wing groups, Citizens United, sound familiar? Yeah, it does sound familiar. They're spending $100,000 in 30-second ads in Ohio, targeting most of them to Cincinnati. And what's interesting about Cincinnati, one of the big right-wing talk show hosts down there, that Billy Cunningham has come out and said, you know, we need to repeal this because workers need to have a seat at the table. You got a radical right-wing conservative who has said that the workers need to have a right to be at the table. And yet you've got a right-wing government there who they think the only way that they can They can dictate. They can, well, dictator. The only way they can rule is by stealing away from the workers. Because, you know, we need that in our tool belt. We need the ability to steal in our tool belt. It's the only way we can run the state. And you look at it in Ohio, much like Michigan, much like Pennsylvania, much like a lot of the radical right-wing states. What'd they do? They cut spending on education. They went after workers' rights, stealing wages and benefits back. And you know what they did with them? They shifted them for handouts for corporations. Does that make a hell of a lot of sense to you? I mean, it doesn't make much sense to me. So, again, Tuesday, I think it'll be a huge day. We're going to be in Columbus covering the SB5 fight and see how that's going to come out. And we hope to bring you some interesting interviews with folks who will be there. So we hope you'll tune in. And again, if you missed any portion of our program, thericksmithshow.com is where you can go to check them out. I get these, and I would love to know if there are topics you'd like me to cover. Stosh called in not too long ago and said, hey, let's talk about Buy American. And we're gonna do some of that. Other people have called and said, hey, we'd like to talk about Marcellus Shale. Do some of that. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. But I'm on a bunch of these email lists for these companies that it's their job to, you know, go out and hawk guests and to go out and push, topics because for the most part, the topics, pay them. You know, these people who are the CEO of this or that or the spokesman for this product or that problem, they want to go out and they want you to, you know, buy their stuff. And I got one today that just kind of made me laugh. Also kind of made me a little worried. A couple of the things on there, you know, the pitch was forget Twitter, forget Facebook, forget LinkedIn. They won't help you find a job or be more employable. That's according to Shakif Lokanwala. He's the CEO of New View Systems. The key is being a global employee. How can job seekers be more global? And what are the three key attributes to make someone a global employee? And there's part of me that wants to interview this guy to find out what are the three attributes to being a global employee. And I started thinking about it. And, you know, never mind moving from state to state. You better be willing to move from country to country. And, you know, just like the argument that they make about right-to-work states, you're going to move out of Pennsylvania down to South Carolina, you know, or down to Tennessee like the Carlisle Tire and Wheel people had to do, or the ones who were lucky enough to be able to move down. But the wages are crummy down there, and they always argue, well, the standard of living is a lot different down there. You know, a minimum wage in the South is good living. You live high on the hog because it's a lot cheaper down there. And, you know, if you're a global employee, you know, those pennies a day you'll be making in places like China or India, I have you living like a king in no time. So there's part of me that says I need to get a Shafiq Lokhandwala. That's probably the reason I won't. Lokhandwala. To come on and talk to us about being a global employee. I mean, we've got global citizens. The investor class considers themselves global citizens. They've got homes all over the world, bank accounts all over the world, especially in those places that let them shelter some of their assets. So, you know, why not? Why not go after that? You know, a couple of the other guests that, you know, that they wanted to talk about in virtual fertilization. If it's out of reach for you, like it is for so many women, we can tell you how it helps. Because one clinic is giving away a free in vitro fertilization this winter. Your listeners can submit their stories and they can win. And I'm going, do I really want to talk to somebody who's hawking, bringing more people into the world? We've got 7 billion people. And I was thinking back to this story in like Parade magazine. Where the woman had like 8 kids, had been in vitro fertilized, had 8 kids in one shot. And the woman said, well, God wouldn't give her more than she could handle. And my response was, God didn't want her to have any. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha's sway. Imperial, mysterious, imperial.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and
in the wheelchair kind of things. I mean, they will. I don't even know if they'll know for a number of months whether or not the surgery worked.
I mean, it's terrible, really, because I have to say, he is quite amazing to watch, though. Play.
Well, yeah, and from the standpoint of the classic drop-back passer with a cannon on his shoulder, kind of,
But,
it's like he's throwing darts.
I didn't know it was that serious. I didn't know it was...